Welcome to episode 127 of the Linux Slugcast. We are an open podcast / slug that meets at 9 p.m. Eastern every first and third Friday of the month using Mumble. We encourage anyone listening to join us and participate on the podcast. Check out all the server details at linuxslugcast.com. If you have any questions, comments, or topics you'd like us to discuss and are unable to join us on a live show, you can send us email at feedback@linuxslugcast.com or check out our MeWe page. And we are still in IRC on Freenode / Linux Slugcast. With us tonight is Ed.
Here.
5150.
Howdy, folks.
Joe.
Hello, hello.
Minix.
Howdy.
And Netminer.
Hello, Fred.
So, feedback. I think there was some stuff on MeWe. I know I didn't get any email. Actually, Minix, I believe you posted something.
Yeah, I had posted an article about Linux Mint, since I know Joe is on the Mintcast. It was some journalist complaining about fragmentation and how Linux Mint should be the distro to, I guess, disintegrate, or Joe can probably explain it better.
Yeah, it was an article saying that Linux Mint needed to go the way of some of the other distros that have recently fallen off the map, like Scientific Linux, and like they're thinking Integros is going to end up doing. But mostly it was just talking about fragmentation and people evidently not liking choice. So, and basically, Linux Mint got picked because it's a popular distro that is based on Ubuntu, but is not Ubuntu. So, I've kind of talked that article to death on the other podcasts, and he had some points about fragmentation, but I just don't agree with it.
Well, that, I think, doesn't Linux Mint put more do their own sort of things in additions to the distro as well? Like they have the built-in.
Right.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of the what is their rollback
time shift.
Yeah, time shift. Yeah. And they're doing other stuff like that that Ubuntu isn't doing. I mean,
right. But his main point was that what the makers of the developers of Linux Mint could do was, since the main focus for everyone in regards to Mint was Cinnamon, and Cinnamon is now available to everyone, they could just drop the distro and just make Cinnamon better, have that be their focus. And no, it's not the only thing that Linux Mint does, but that was the point of it, that the fragmentation, the choices, it's just confusing to people. And they think that that might be what's preventing the fast development of Linux.
Yeah, I'd have to disagree, because if nothing else, a lot of people will go say, well, yeah, your first distribution should be Ubuntu. But you're fine that, you know, your first distribution ought to be something like Mint, because,
right.
Yeah, you get in Ubuntu, if you want to use anything non-proprietary, then you have to know that you need to go into the menu and check, you know, add the non-free repositories and et cetera. Right. And well, if you're just a brand new Linux user, you're not going to know to do that. You probably find out real quick.
Well, you know, what drew me to Mint was the fact that it was so similar to, well, looking to and in use to XP and Windows 98.
Right. I think Mint was probably the first thing I had running. So, yeah, it's, you know, as a new distro, I think it's probably perfect. Yeah, I mean, the rest of us been old hands, you know. We probably say, yeah, we only need one distro, call it Linux, you know, Linux from scratch if we had to or whatever. And then add on, you know, decide what package manager we wanted to use. But, yeah.
Well,
you know, but
I just want to state this now that Linux from scratch is not for new users. Don't try it.
No, that was just in jest. I mean, even now at my point, Linux from scratch would be something to teach me more about Linux, not something that I would actually say, yeah, I want to put this on my production machine and run it.
Right.
I still want to try LFS too. That's one of my upcoming projects.
It's on my list of one days, right up there with Arch.
I've ran Arch before. I haven't ran Gentoo, though. That's another one I'd like to try.
But at the same time, I don't see the point of getting upset that there are multiple distros out there.
For me, that's a feature of Linux. It's something positive.
Right.
Exactly.
And you got the power of choice, you know.
Exactly. I mean, but I mean, if Ubuntu is out there and Ubuntu has all the backing, that's you know, it's got money behind it, and it's got lots of people pushing it. Fine, but that doesn't mean that other people can't do their own thing. I mean, if Clem gets stressed out and decides to go away, then I'm sure other people will pick up Mint. It might not probably have as fast a development without him, but I'm sure other people will pick it up and, you know, pick them up the ball and run with it. But and at the same time, I mean, what does it matter, you know?
Not only that, but just, I mean, the more distros you have, you're going to have more innovation too within the Linux community, innovation and friendly competition and things like that. That just, I think it makes everything better.
Right. I mean, things, the other distros are getting forked because they don't necessarily agree with whatever guidelines or the box that they, that distribution has put themselves into.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the whole spirit of Linux. Any of us could go out and fork a distribution and create our own, and some posters podcasters I know actually have. For Time Door had his own media or podcast creation distribution that he'd set up. They included everything you needed to do audio and video editing.
Right. And I think that was one of the complaints of the article, was just, you know, people making or taking things like Ubuntu and then just wrapping it up the way that they want. And then they have to support all their changes in perpetuity, and that being a problem.
Well, you also run into the difference between Linux Mint seems to have a moderately full-size community. Some of these other outfits have two or three developers, or maybe one developer, Memphis sort of thing, and they burn out. So there is sort of a critical mass that Mint seems to have that some of the, I just want to try this for a little while, distros don't have. But also Mint gives cross-pollination to Ubuntu and to the Debian universe in ways that a purely commercially focused distro like Ubuntu itself may not have.
Okay. And as far as supporting stuff, I think the vast majority of derivative distributions, you know, are using stuff that's already in the repo. So for saying, well, and you know, I don't know if Ubuntu has any kind of commitment to supporting Mint in the repos. So, you know, I don't see that, you know, because there's Mint, it puts a burden on Ubuntu. You know, I could go fork Solus, but the trouble with Solus is, you know, and I completely support their decisions, saying, well, you know, when there's so many different applications to do one job. We're going to pick the one we think is best, and that's going to be in the repos. And if you want to install something else, you're on your own. So I would not suggest, say, Solus is something, let's go fork this and put a completely different desktop that's not in the repos and all that, unless you're, you know, really committed to supporting it.
Okay. And while we're talking about Danny Meek's stuff, Danny, you evidently put Mint, or was it Mint, on a T100 TA?
It was a Disco Dingo, so it's 1904 Ubuntu.
Okay, okay.
But I got it working. Like, like the whole thing is, it's a 64-bit CPU, but the bootloader is the problem, 32-bit. So you got to move some files around before you actually get it to run. And I got it running. I used a 32-bit bootloader, put that in EFI, and I had to make it to root and set all that up in there so that, you know, when I turned it off and rebooted it, it would actually work. So
right,
it worked.
Right.
The only issue that I can see now is, which I can fix, because this uses one of those Atom chips that are kind of notorious for audio and for Bluetooth and things like that. Audio works good, but I'm not getting a Bluetooth connection. And I'm also encountering a problem when what would you call this form factor where you can take it off the screen and use it as a
two-in-one.
Two-in-one.
So convertible.
When I take the screen off, I can rotate it. It rotates fine, but it still sees the touch input as if it was landscape. So
right. That's what I wanted to talk about.
Yeah. That's the issue.
Now, I do remember I did write my own rotation scripts for that and then add it to my startup. But my T100 is currently dead until I can replace the power port. And I don't know if I have the soldering skills necessary to do that.
The power port? You mean like the
micro
USB or micro USB on the side?
Yeah. That's a difficult one for me. But I think a couple of the websites that have the write-ups for it, the one that was Ubuntu-based, and then there was another one that was Fedora-based. Between those two, there was a really good script for screen rotation, and I just had to make some minor adjustments to get it working. I'll have to look for it again and work with you and see if we can get something put together for it. But after we had talked about it after I had seen you post about it on MeWe, I started remembering that. So I'll bust out the Venue 8 because I know that has a version of the script still on it. Oh, and I guess the T102 has a version of that script on it too. So we can work on that.
Now, when you first put Linux on there, did the screen rotate at all whenever you took the
No, like with Mint, you go into the settings, and it's in the screen settings you can allow for rotation, and that worked on the Venue 11, but it did not work correctly on the T100. I had to just write a bash script to do that. I took somebody else's bash script and modified it heavily to work right.
Yeah, mine actually rotates fine. I was surprised. It's just the touch.
The touch, yeah.
And the Bluetooth, I can do. I wrote a script for a Winbook I had that has the same processor and to get the Bluetooth working. And I was actually just pulling the module from a different kernel. And I got that. I bought a Winbook. It was like a $100 laptop, the cheapest x86 laptop I could find about 2 months ago from Micro Center. And I actually had Mint running on that. And so all of those issues that come with that Z8000 series processor or 3000 series, I'm not sure what it is, 8 or 3. I think it's 8300, yeah, something like that.
I don't remember having problems with the Bluetooth out of the box. Maybe it's the newer kernel.
It could be, but that's the issue I had with that. And sound was an issue, just trying to get the sound to work. And
yeah, well, especially after they changed some of the drivers, you had to disable the HDMI output or something to that effect to be able to use both the speakers as well as the headphone jack.
Right. Yeah. That. So I got that worked out, and the audio is still not quite right. Like when I first booted up on the Winbook, it doesn't come. It shows an X over the speaker, you know. So, but what happened? If I open VLC, it recognizes something, and the sound, within the audio mixer pops up and shows that I've got connection. So I don't know what it is.
Now, are you able to do anything with Bluetooth at all?
Yeah, on the Winbook. Okay. But not on the. I mean, it recognizes. I can turn on Bluetooth on the Asus.
Okay.
And it recognizes. I got it to recognize a game controller, but not my headset.
Yeah. That's actually a different problem. What was the solution for that? You had to install a different.
Like a Bluetooth management?
No, it's not the Bluetooth management. It's an issue that Bluetooth has in Linux with the type of headset that you're connecting. Like if you're trying to use it with a mic, it probably isn't going to work. But it wasn't Pulse Audio. It wasn't Alsa. It was something else. It's been a while since I did a T100.
Jack?
No, it wasn't Jack either.
But even when it recognized the game controller, it showed it. It was an Xbox controller, so it showed it there, but I wasn't able to actually connect with
it. Do anything with it?
Yeah.
Do you have a Bluetooth keyboard?
Yes.
Well, then try that, because sometimes the controllers don't want to work right anyway.
Yeah, I may try that.
If the keyboard works, then you know your Bluetooth is just fine, and it's just something in your audio settings that are causing the problem.
Right, yeah. So that's just a couple of things I need to hammer out, but so far I'm happy with it. It's a neat little device. I've never had a two-in-one like that, so.
Yeah. I'm still a big fan of the T100s, even though the processor is aging a little bit. Anymore... you can get the T102s for roughly the same price, and they're a little bit better, although mine does have a problem with the rotation sensor, so I had to disable one of the two landscape modes.
It's a Z3735 is what's on the T100 I have, Intel Atom.
Well, all I can say is if someplace Ken Fallon is listening, he's saying you guys should coordinate on Hacker Public Radio once you get all the bugs worked out.
Okay. Well, I'll have to pull up my notes because I had it pretty well hashed out. I had it set up doing everything I wanted.
Yeah, I need to finish my HPR. I did an episode about how I set up a Nextcloud server on a Rock Pro 64. I did the hardware part, but I was going to break it up into two episodes. Now I need to record the software part.
And I think I'll definitely do one on the, I should do one on the Dell Venue Pro 11. And I know you saw that at Texas Linux Fest. That's what I was using.
Yes.
Yeah, if I wasn't planning on getting looking at not the Rock 64 Pro, but Pine 64 Pro, definitely I would be looking at prices on those.
Yeah, I think you can still get the Venue Pro 11 if you're lucky between 125 and like 180. And the T100 was when I was buying them regularly, because my daughters still have them running Windows, but it was around $100 even.
It's a great little device. It reminds me of the, what was that form factor that was so popular?
The Aspire 1, the netbooks.
Yeah, the netbooks. That's what it reminds me of, just with a detachable screen. But I like that form factor, the little clamshell.
Yeah, the little clamshell, though, they made like one version that was 64-bit, and it had a really terrible processor in it.
I think I had that, what was it, EEE or something like that?
Oh, yeah, the triple E.
Yeah,
the EEE machine.
Mm-hmm. I liked it. I mean, I ran Ubuntu on that one, and I never really had any issues with it.
Yeah.
The only thing I'm really planning on using this the T100 for is like just mainly for the tablet functionality. I have the other laptop that pretty much does everything I want to do, but it's kind of neat having a Linux tablet. You know, it's not too common.
Exactly.
And the keyboard works, the virtual keyboard works great on it too. I was surprised.
Oh, onboard?
Yeah, is it, what is the desktop manager that, is that GNOME Shell? Is that what they use, Ubuntu uses now?
Is it Unity or GNOME?
GNOME 3.
Is it GNOME 3?
Yep.
I just don't like the overhead with it.
But yeah, it, as far as, you know, in landscape mode anyway, it's really responsive to touch commands. I was surprised. I used Ubuntu Touch, I think, a long time ago on a Nexus 7, and it was not ready for for prime time yet. That's about the best I can say about it.
Well, I assume you have a home server running Linux.
Yes. Yeah. I was going to talk about that too. If you wanted to.
Right. Well, my go-to recommendation is definitely X2Go.
X2Go. You like that?
Yes. If you want to do some thin clienting with that tablet, and it will, and it'll do it well, I recommend X2Go.
I'll check it out. I haven't tried it before.
Joe, I've got eBay up. Which model of the Dell Venue 11 Pro was it that you were using?
The 7130 is the one that's most compatible, and the worst you'll have to do is buy the Wi-Fi Bluetooth module, and I'll have to find the page again. The guy was installing Fedora on it, but he recommends several that he knows will work out of the box, just pulling out the old module and putting this one in. And it has to be the 7130. Now, the i5 version doesn't gain much processing power over the i3 version, but the i5 version you can get with 8 gigs of RAM, and the cost doesn't go up that much.
Okay, well, I was looking at 7139 for $80, but apparently that's not the one that's compatible.
That is correct. And I definitely recommend getting the keyboard with the battery in it if you want to be able to use the thing for more than like 3 hours.
Yeah, now I'm looking at 7130. I'm just getting parts, so let me switch back to best match rather than lowest price.
Okay, I found that link. I'm going to post it.
Yeah, you're right. I'm seeing them. Yeah, I'm seeing 129, 135, so you're about right.
Okay, I posted the link there, and like I said, he lists several of the cards that work well, like the Qualcomm Atheros AR9462. I think I grabbed the Intel wireless, though, the 7260, but that one didn't want to work out of the box, so I switched back to the old one, and I guess that person had replaced the original from it anyway, and it works out of the box, unless I have to power cycle if I want to turn Bluetooth off or back on after it being turned off. But this guy had, go ahead.
I was going to say, did you notice a big drain with the Bluetooth on, or does it make any difference?
I've only turned it off for short periods of time. I usually use, even with the keyboard that's on it, I prefer my Bluetooth keyboard. So, and my Bluetooth mouse, so it just stays on. I'd probably get better battery power if I turned it off. But this guy goes through and has a really good write-up on how to set it up, but he set it up with Fedora, and I just switched it all to Mint. Yeah, it's Studio Teabag. I think he's got several other devices.
Did we want to move on to the next topic?
Well, I did want to mention Kay Wisher also had some feedback from LinuxGizmos.com, and I guess the International Space Station has some new free-flying robots, though I put free-flying in air quotes because everything floats in the International Space Station. It's not like it's a drone. But it looks like this about foot square cube that and has bays for, you know, three bays for various science experiments that can be switched in and out. And I'm seeing speaker, microphone, several cameras, touch screen, laser pointer, flashlight, wake button, impeller. So I guess it does kind of fly around. Those holes in the center, I guess it must, you know, have some kind of thrust in there. Battery, has an arm to grip things. So must be a useful thing rather than just carrying around a tool sack. You have this thing follow you around.
The pictures of them look very interesting. Wonder if there's any videos out there about showing off them using it.
Oh, I imagine there must be. Looks like something I'd like to have, except, you know, it wouldn't float here in the house. Looks like something if you had to pick it up and lug it around, that'd be kind of heavy. But it is open source because it's running Ubuntu. It's like cell phone processor. Snapdragon processor. And running Ubuntu ROS and Android 7.1. But three payload bays, six cameras, and a touchscreen. So I don't know if it's more just a floating camera to document whatever they're doing. But it looks very science fiction-y. All I know is I want one. Okay, the article's linked in the show notes. Are we ready to get on the show topics?
Sure.
Okay, I don't know if we'll get through of all my stuff. There's a couple things I want to make sure we get through. Of course, four of us here on the show, me, Ed, Minix, and Joe, we're all together at Texas Linux Fest last weekend. Also, Morton C. came down from Ohio, so we all kind of hung out during the weekend. And I think for all of us, this was our first time attending Texas Linux Fest. It's been, unlike a lot of Linux Fests, it's in a different community in Texas every year. And I don't know if I've noticed that much, but this is the first, at least this year. Joe pointed out how close it was to him that it was in northern Texas, and I looked, and driving time wasn't that bad. Of course, I took a leisurely way down and a leisurely way back, but, you know, if you're just to get out and haul, it's a 6-hour drive for me, so that's certainly not unreasonable. I looked at other locations. I guess last year it was in Austin, which is more down on the down on the Gulf, but you know, sort of straight down, that would have been 8 hours, which wouldn't have been too bad. But in any case, this is the first because of other concerns I would usually have this time of year that I don't have anymore. This is my first time heading down to Texas Linux Fest, and really enjoyed myself, mainly meeting Joe, putting a face to the voice out of the void, and of course Minix and Ed, which we've corresponded with on this channel and other channels, had their input for years. But it's great to, it's great to meet everybody in person. And I think that's why one of the reasons why we get together at these things is to actually meet up with the people that we've hung out with online.
Yeah, I had gotten a hold of Joe, I think, on MeWe beforehand, and he told me he would be at the lab table, and I met him first, I think. And then I met Ed. I met Mortensen. He was really nice. And then I met 50. We all went out to lunch. That was really good. The talks were really good. I didn't know if you wanted to talk about any of that, 50.
Yeah, you know, I was into that. I think it was interesting the way Joe and I met face-to-face before. It's something I've been meaning to do, but for a while. But we found out a couple years ago when we had a general podcasters table at Ohio Linux Fest. The vast majority of people come to Linux Fest, they don't know Linux podcasts outside Twit and Jupyter Network. They don't even know Tilts. And
a lot of them didn't even know Jupyter Broadcasting when I talked to them.
So, you know, I made up this T-shirt with everything I could think of. You know, I put Linux Slugcast and Tilts and Hacker Public Radio and Linux Games Cast and GNU World Order, etc. And of course, Mintcast was one of the ones I had. And Joe saw me from the back and came up to me and says, "Hey, I saw your shirt. You know, I'm one of the hosts of Mintcast." And I said, "Yeah, Joe, I know you are. I'm 50.
Yeah, that was fun.
How was Friday? I missed Friday. I only went Saturday.
Yeah, Friday was a little bit slower, but still really fun. I tried to do the Ansible talk, but I can't remember what the issue was. What was the issue with that first one? Oh, yeah, we couldn't see the screen because we were all the way in the back and couldn't follow along with anything.
Yeah, he did have his slides, but then he would go off a lot of stuff on the slides and you couldn't really see that. And now, the thing about the first day is there is a morning session and afternoon session rather than hourly sessions on Friday. And they are meant to be in-depth, you know, follow along, you know, really meant for people to bring their laptops, fire them up, and actually do the exercises along with the host. And so if you're not in a position to do that, you know, you could pick up things here and there, but you're not going to have that full immersive experience. So it's a lot like if you were studying for a probably not as intense if you're studying for a certification like that track at OLF, but more meant to be intense and in depth than just your normal casual talks. So that's probably why that's on Friday when a lot of people might be working. I mean, I think the show is set up, you know, pretty much if you could, you know, if you could only come on the weekend that you can't get off from your job to come to it, then Saturday is a more casual day.
I think the first talk I went to Saturday was about home automation. That was really good. It was focused on mainly getting off the cloud and what happens if you base all of your automation in your home and you spend all this money and then whatever proprietary software you're using or whatever company cloud service you're using decides to go a different way or they change their interest and decide not to support it anymore and why it's important to kind of, you know, build your own, I guess, and so that you know what's going on and you don't have to worry about it being deprecated and things like that. It was good. I enjoyed it. There's a lot of stuff in there that I kind of wrote down and wanted to try at home, but that was the home automation talk.
Yeah, and I'm really sorry I missed that. And we'll get to why I missed that maybe later, but that was, you know, the a couple of the ones I was really looking forward to were Saturday morning, and I missed Saturday morning.
Yeah, it was good. He went into the hardware that he used and some of the software and stuff, and it was mainly about, he didn't really mention so much about privacy as much as, you know, these companies like Google is kind of infamous for starting projects and then abandoning them, and there's so many devices, Google devices, that people have now that just aren't supported anymore, so it's kind of wasted money. And his whole thing was do it yourself. You know what you're doing, or you know what goes on inside your own builds and the software you put together, and then you don't have to worry about a company that's gonna change their interest and decide to go in a different direction. So I like that. That was kind of hit home with me.
And you know, I think it was Joe was talking up the. Talk happened at the same time, Confessions of a Sysadmin with Al Marquez, and I'm probably butchering the name, and Allie Barnes. And Al was really one of the first people from Texas that I met. We rode the escalators up together Friday morning. And, of course, she saw that T-shirt that I described and surmised that I must be with the group. But she seemed really nice. But... you know, I should let Joe talk about this, but really good talk about, you know, she sort of had humble beginnings and not access to technology, and how she, you know, really bootstrapped her way into being a sysadmin. And I guess she works at Linux Academy now.
Yeah, and is on Jupiter Broadcasting, several of their shows now. Now, I didn't catch the one on the Confessions of the Sysadmin talk that she gave, but I caught the one that she did on containerization. And
yeah,
that was
really
good.
I think we all did. That one was pretty good, yeah.
And then I had a couple of side conversations with Elle about audiobooks in general, because she's a big audiobook fan, and I'm almost always listening to an audiobook or a podcast.
Okay, must have been Mordency that caught that talk. It was talking about it. I know somebody told me afterwards how impressed they were with that particular one.
Yeah, it had to be Mordency.
I think we all went to the container talk, didn't we?
Yeah.
That was a good one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There were Kubernetes talks, you know, all through. And that's one of the ones I did. And like I said, I wish I'd... I kind of got in a little late, and I wish I'd brought, cause we were kind of looking for another, Joe and I were looking for another talk, and I don't know, we were always thinking that didn't, we went in the room, right, and there was nobody in the room, but I think that big room was not room. It was
right.
A
it was
and
a
B
side
were
room.
Both off that.
That's what it was. But we kept missing the talks for B that we wanted to go to, because they were the door that was marked B didn't lead to B. It led to the room that led to B.
Well, actually, the signpost was way down there, but we just assumed, okay, that meant the big room. Though I don't know. We were in A. I would have thought if somebody was talking in B, we would have heard, you know, something.
Right.
So I don't know if they weren't there or not, but you know, that was kind of, and that was really probably on our part. We'll look for it next time. But, you know, we were thinking, yeah, the whole weekend, there's nobody in this room that was supposed to be a track, and everybody's stealing chairs out of there for A, and probably for B as well. I don't know, but we kept expecting a talk, and nobody, we were thinking nobody was there.
We went to the Linux performance tuning talk. That one was pretty good. Do you like that one, 50?
Oh, very much. And I don't know. I think I missed the notes on that. I typed some stuff in, and then on my phone at least, and then I think I lost some of the commands. But yeah, there were a lot of commands in there that he talked about that I had never heard of, and want to pursue. So I want to make sure, you know, if the notes are posted, I get back into that. And you know, if you took better notes than I did, you know, if you can shoot me an email, you know, hey, these are the commands he talked about.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised they weren't recording the talks. Or at least I didn't notice them recording any of the talks so that they could post them online.
Yeah, that is sketchy between Linux Fest. Majority of them really do not. The only one that I know of that 100% gets recorded is Linux Fest Northwest.
I did get the impression that he's given that talk about 1,000 times before.
Yeah, me too. He was, he knew what he was talking about.
Yeah, I kind of got the same impression with the guy that did the Red Hat talk. The last one we went to.
You know, you get comfortable with a topic, and if it's still pertinent, you know, sometimes you get around the, everybody's heard this, but, you know, if you're going to more than one venue with the same talk, I mean, it would be different if you showed up at the same Linux Fest every year and gave the same talk, though, you know, there'd be new people all the time. But, especially if you're sponsored by a company or whatever to be there to talk, I don't think there's anything wrong with, going with what you know.
Yeah, one of the
which I had recorded.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, I wish I had recorded that talk just in audio, the performance tuning.
Yeah, I was going to say one of the more interesting services he talked about was TuneD. I put a link to it in the Mumble, but it's a system tuning service, and it can do the things he talked about that it can do. Something I'd never even heard of. It was pretty insane how granular it gets as far as tuning your system.
Oh, yeah, I remember that now that you put a bunch of those links in the Voxer. I still have those. I think I have to retype them because I tried doing like a right-click or and doing a copy, and I wasn't able to copy links out of Voxer, but I'll do that by next show, because I think this, everybody listening to this would at least be, interested in seeing the links.
Let's see, another one I went to was the container talk. We talked about that a little bit, because I really didn't know the difference between Docker and containers in general, and LXC and all that, and she did a good job of explaining that too.
Right, and most of that wasn't really about Docker or Kubernetes specifically. I mean, it was about setting up your own containerization with Chroot.
Mm-hmm. And she showed the difference. I guess what did she did in a demonstration of an Apache installation using an LXC container or something, and it was just a matter of seconds before it was already set up. It was impressive, but that's one thing I really don't know a lot about that I want to get into is containerization and building my own and stuff like that. That seems to be the future.
Yeah, definitely. You start seeing a lot of distributions moving away from repos and going to
their own packaging
containers.
System. Yeah.
Well, it's with storage getting so cheap, so that instead of saying, well, you've got to have only one copy of this supporting application, to be able to run this other app, you can set up containers and and have either duplications or different versions, because you might have an app installed that isn't up to the latest, Python's a really good example. I mean, we have a lot of stuff still based on Python 2 out there.
Right. But I do want to also mention there that Docker does share libraries amongst its containers.
Oh, does it? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I didn't know that either. I thought it was completely sandboxed.
Well, mostly there have been security issues with Docker where it has ended up, what was it? You could initiate commands on the parent box, but if you ever watch like a Docker container download, it does it in sections, And then that's really like the library segments. So it will try and reuse that if it can.
I know my new machines, just like a lot of the multi-core old ones, are going to be built up with lots RAM stuffing for both VMs and snaps or what have you. One of the reasons why I'm looking at the computers that I'm looking at is that they will have 32 gig RAM capability on a quad core.
And another thing, not to step on that minor. And another thing, you go to the conferences. Sometimes you will, see in the catalog. There's a talk that you can't get to because you went to another talk, but at least you're made aware. Like Saturday morning, it always goes this way. You will have half a day, or not something, but you'll have an hour and you look. Yeah, there's nothing really I want on that. Interested in, and you'll pick the closest thing. And then the next hour there will be three talks that you want to see, and one of the ones, like we just what we were talking about, is distributions moving away from package managers and going containerization. And I hadn't even really heard about this Fedora Silverblue desktop, but that's definitely something I'm going to want to look into. I don't know if I can retrofit my Fedora I have now, or if I'd have to reinstall, but essentially it's moving. Looks like it's moving Fedora away from RPMs towards flat packs.
Did you get to attend any more talks?
Yes. This is more of a soft skill type thing, but you're worth more than you know. And that was okay. Not great.
I missed that one. What did they talk about?
Personality types, that kind of thing.
Oh, okay. So not like specific to software.
No, it was too general.
Yeah, I went to one like that too. It was called Start a Cult, Building a FOSS Community from Scratch. And it was similar, probably. It was about life advice and things like that, but I didn't find it too interesting.
Yeah, I prefer sort of the hard tech stuff, but I have seen these start to turn up at Pod's life coach type stuff, how to present yourself to get your next higher up tech job sometimes. Those aren't usually what I would go to or talk about, but it's good that they're there for the people who want that to help.
Yeah, they had a little something for everybody, I guess. The Start a Cult one was, it was the guy that was there. I don't know if you remember the table for Pearl. They were from Austin. It was that guy.
Okay, yeah. I remember they were very, boisterous. That's not really the right word, but very... very pro Pearl, as you might expect them to be.
Yeah, they were gung ho about Pearl. Definitely.
Yes, gung ho.
What did he present on?
He did the Starting a Cult, Building a FOSS Community from Scratch. It was that redheaded guy. His name is William Braswell. He said everybody knows him in the tech community as Will the Chill, but I've never heard of him. But I'm not a Pearl guy either, so.
That is interesting.
Yeah.
Maybe Pearl started as a cult and it's ending as a cult.
Well, hopefully it doesn't end like most cults do.
Yeah, we had another one, same time, understanding burnout, I guess how to counteract burnout in your job.
Joe, was that guy Samir, is he a friend of yours, the one that did the Live in the Vita Loca on the command line?
Well, he's in the PC users group, so we shared a table and we chatted a bit, but I don't know if I'd call us friends. I have invited him to contact me. I was trying to get him on for an interview or a talk on Mintcast to see if he'd come on there and basically give the same talk about command line for the Mint listeners?
Yeah, I went to them. I had to bail a little bit early, but it was interesting from what I heard.
Yeah, I saw most of his presentation, and it was kind of awesome.
Yeah, his whole focus was do everything you can within the command line, including like web browsing and stuff like that, email.
And his name was Samir Khan.
Yep, Samir Khan. He's a nice guy. I talked to him.
Yeah?
I think he used to live in North Texas.
Yeah, he said he used to be in this area and then moved out there and joined the users groups out there.
Another guy from this area is David Stokes. He was presenting on MySQL, and I've seen him several times, and he's really good with MySQL presentations.
Now, is that the guy who was running the Oracle table?
That's possible. I think he is with Oracle.
Yeah, I you know, Oracle is usually present at most Linux Fest. So I, you know, really nice guy. Works if it's the guy I'm thinking of, great guy, works for a horrible company. You know, he's at almost every Linux Fest I've ever been at.
Yeah, and he's a good spokesman for MySQL.
I think that was the last talk I attended was the command line talk.
You know, outside the talks, I did want to talk a little bit about the venue eventually. You know, the all-encompassing video venue. I think I'm the only one stayed in the hotel there, but also the Toyota Music Factory and all that as far as entertainment. Now, unlike most Linux Fests that I've been to, there really wasn't any kind of social wrap party, dinner, or anything like that. However, you know, Friday evening, there was a gathering at the Hard Eight Barbecue that was sponsored by Jupiter Broadcasting and Linux Academy. And by sponsored, I mean they sort of arranged it, but they didn't pay for your food or anything. That was all on your own. But pretty much they just put out there, hey, we're all going over here to eat after 6 o'clock after last talk is over on Saturday or Friday. So I rode out there with Mordency. Most of you guys live locally, I think, went home, so, or I know did. So great barbecue. I have to say that. You guys down in Texas, there's probably nothing I can talk to you about on barbecue. We've got some pretty good up in Kansas City, but great place. The whole thing was sort of, the sides were all open air, you know, and smoke just permeated the whole place. I mean, everything was pretty much, the stuff I had was, you know, was kind of over coals, but, you know, they were doing stuff kind of open flame or what, you know. But, you look outside and there's just black smoke rolling up the air and there's sort of a fog around the thing. I mean, and I've got allergies and it didn't really bother me. I mean, but, you know, the sides were all open so they could roll up with like screens or, you know, if it got in bad weather or whatever. But pretty much the thing was, the sides were open to the air. So, you know, good meal. So they had a band playing. Okay, music. I could have used a little less bass, so I could have thought once in a while, because we were right up there next to the band, and you know, I kind of don't like to eat when, you know, my insides are vibrating. But other than that, you know, and we stayed there for quite a while after finishing dinner, you know, hour and a half or so, everybody getting together and talking.
Yeah, I didn't know there's more than one Hard Eight. There's another Hard Eight near my house. And it sounds like the same.
Yeah, I looked up. I guess it's pretty much a chain, or well, small chain. So yeah, I'm sure they're both the same. And like I said, they didn't really have anything Well, they did have some programs go to, I guess, later in the evening at the, at least till 8 o'clock at the convention center, which then, no, we went to about 6 on Friday. But both days there was a raffle held by your group, Joe.
Yeah, we gave away a Raspberry Pi Zero W, and then a Raspberry Pi Zero W that was in a case, and then a Raspberry Pi Zero W that came with one of the full kits of stuff that you could put together.
And go ahead and plug your local lug there. I think you mentioned it once before this evening, but go ahead and say.
That's the NT Lug, the North Texas Linux Users Group. We meet every third Saturday of the month at the Dallas Makerspace. Everyone's invited.
And
Joe, you go to that regularly?
Yeah, I try to make it every month. Since I started going about 6 or 8 months ago, I think I've missed once.
Yeah, I need to go.
I'd recommend anybody that lives in the area to check out the Dallas Makerspace. It's an awesome facility. I mean, it's not just Linux, but I mean, anything you could ever want to build or hack or anything, they have the resources there. And what's really, what they really have that you can't find anywhere else is all of the knowledge from the users there, that everybody's more than happy to help you, you know, as far as getting projects started. And if you don't know what you're doing, they'll teach you. And they have classes there that I think is it Eventbrite or something like that, that they post a calendar on, and you can check out. A lot of the classes are free. You don't even need to be a member to attend them.
Yeah, I'm not a full member, so I haven't been in the back or anything, but it looks like they got a couple of full machine shops back there. Yeah. I know they have some 3D printers floating around and computers that are out on a few of the openly accessible tables, and it sounds like they have a few CNC machines in the back, and I have no clue what else, but from what I understand, they have one of just about anything. If you can't make it there, you can't make it.
Yeah, that's true. I used to teach welding there. I'm still a member, but I haven't had time to be there. But they got a full metal shop with a plasma cutter and a CNC plasma cutter and the CNC wood cutter and drill presses. And they even got an auto shop with a hydraulic lift, you know, to lift your car up. They got powder coating facility. They got like 3 or 4 kilns for, you know, pottery, and they got like a big pinball room where they work on old vintage pinball machines. And they got everything. It's an amazing place.
Yeah, and the NT Lug, now they occasionally will have someone come in and give a class or, you know, talk about their passion, but usually it's just all of us sitting around talking about what's going on most recently in technology or with Linux and helping new people get Linux installed on whichever machine they're trying to do or fix something that's broken on something that they bring last time and we got everything set up on or something to that effect.
And I did make an invitation to the North Texas Lug if they wanted to come on some evening and talk at length about the you know, about what they do, which I hope, you know, Joe said he'd help coordinate that, so I'm hoping one evening we'll have a guest, and really it sounds like fascinating, the makers group, if someone, you know, though, you know, Minix did the rundown, if you guys, you know, if you guys wanted to be, you know, come on, you know, on the show as a major topic one evening, that would certainly be something I think everybody would want to listen to.
Right. And that's next weekend on Saturday that we're meeting. Usually it's the night after this podcast, but because the first Saturday was on the 1st, it's different. It will be on the 15th.
And while I'm thinking of it, Ed and Minix, I really want to thank you guys for joining us tonight, because not a problem I have personally, but I know you know, if us meeting on Friday nights, you know, there might be spousal resistance to say, what you're you know, instead of going out, you want to hang out with your weird Linux friends online.
Well, I'm at work. I work second shift, so I'm actually at work right now. I just got my Bluetooth headphones on, and I'm a programmer on second shift. So
I think my wife is happy that this hobby just doesn't cost any money.
That's the great thing about Linux. You don't have to pay for it.
Yeah, but I'll talk to Stuart because I know he handed off the information to somebody else, and I'll see if I can get somebody from there on.
Okay. Yeah, I did want to talk a little bit about the venue. Like I said, I was probably the only one of us actually, since I drove in. Mortensen flew in, and apparently then he combined hotel and he clicked on a thing, and it was actually the total was cheaper than just the flight when he combined the hotel. Of course, it wasn't anywhere near anything. So once he had a rental car, and once he went home in the evening, we didn't see him. Left me kind of my own devices in the evening, which was fine, and I didn't really take advantage. I was more of a home buddy than I've ever been at one of these things. But not a fault of the venue, because the way it's set up, I think it's on the south end. You've got the Irving Community Center or Convention Center. And it's an interesting building. Briefly talk about that, because it's got sort of this exoskeleton around it. All if you look at my pictures, which I've posted, you can see part of it. But I mean, there's a building in the center, and then the top floor is covered by this, you know, all this ironwork outside. And I don't know if that's tornado protection or just aesthetics, but you know, if I was going to write a check to build a building, I'd be asking an architect, you know, what's all this iron stuff hanging out the window for?
But well, it did help in the rain.
Yeah, I imagine it's the big cover. And you know, inside, I assume we are on the fourth floor, the top floor. I assume second and third floors are very similar. You know, bottom floor is more of a lobby space. And a couple ways to get up, you know, and we found the elevators were really the fastest way up and down, but there were escalators. There's an escalator that takes you from first floor to third floor. No. You got three flights of escalators, so I guess it's only one floor at a time. I guess just that first floor is really tall because it's the lobby space. And that's how I got in the first way. And then after that, we found out the elevators were a lot faster. But it was interesting, the big long escalator ride. And then on the outside of the building, on one thing is the north side, but the side closest to the hotel, is there were outside steps. And the steps were like, you know, each step would probably take you two or three strides over it to get to the next step. And 15 years ago, I would have looked at that and said, yeah, that looks like a heck of a lot of fun to go walk up that. And now I look at it and say, no way in heck.
Yeah, and I seem to remember somebody mentioning that it was really hot, and then me just looking over at Ed and saying, this isn't hot. You can still breathe.
Yeah, it wasn't hot. It was a little more humid than I'm used to, but, you know, I'm between you guys and I guess our companion, which will be, since you didn't mention, will be left unnamed. I think everybody will be able to figure it out.
I was trying to be polite about it.
Yes, as far as climate.
Yeah, ask Joe and Ed what it's like in August in North Texas. It's not fun.
Right. Well, I saw some of the forecasts for this upcoming weekend, it said it's supposed to feel like, 105 or something in the Fort Worth area.
Jeez.
Well, let's just say I'm here in Kansas, as you guys know, and I think most of the people listening, and those temperatures and humidity levels are certainly not unknown here. But, you know, yeah, our friend acted like he was dying on. Well, I wouldn't say that, but yeah, I wouldn't have found it necessary to comment.
Yeah, but I think he has kind of a condition with the sun, so he doesn't do well in full sun like that. Not really his fault.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, and he had I guess he had mentioned when y'all went out to Heart 8 the day before that he was sitting next to a window and he was getting the full sun and he was kind of feeling the effects of that too. So he's an indoor guy. Doesn't do well with sun.
Yeah, you know, he's more old school, gets his tan from the green glow of the monitor.
Yeah, gets that the cathode ray tan.
And then, you know, I was in the adjacent Westin Hotel, and there's the only one in the hotel of our group. But yeah, I have to comment, if anybody's thinking of staying there, I've been in Westin / Marriott's. That was the most modern one, had, you know, really modern bathroom with a big shower. You know, I'm used to the tub and the shower curtain and the, you know, shower built into the tub, but not, you know, been a while since I've seen a really good full shower in a hotel room. Had a 40-inch TV rather than a 20-inch like they all bought when, you know, everybody had to convert to LCD. And the other thing that I thought was really cool, probably have been a 30-foot cable, but, you know, go down and around and all there, at least 20-foot. But there was an HDI connection right there on the desk that you could pull the cable out. And, you know, let's say you had videos on your laptop, you could plug it in and, you know, switch to that input. I'm assuming you could. I can't imagine why that cable would be there if not. And built into the TV, you had both a Netflix account and a YouTube channel, and maybe more stuff. I don't know.
Yeah, that sounds like an uncommon convenience from what I've heard from a lot of other people that do a lot of traveling to hotels. Usually it's very locked down. So, yeah, that does sound cool.
Yeah, there are a lot of these hotels, you know, they'll screw a plate over the HDMI input.
How early did you reserve that hotel?
Fairly late. It was getting where it was, you know, I said, oh man, I really need to do it if I'm going to stay there. And I don't know what else would have been close if I, you know, I definitely think would have been Ubering in had my car. So I guess I would have been driving, but
it was right there. Just walk across the street.
And the other cool thing, I have never come across this. Usually everything is booked. I'd made the mistake of since, you know, I'd booked, Thursday night and Friday night, but I hadn't booked Saturday night. You know, I thought I had, and I came in and said, no, you don't have Saturday night. Well, that's okay. You know, check it off on the computer. You know, usually, nope, sorry, there's no rooms.
Oh, so you left Sunday morning.
So I thought, you know, that was pretty cool. Also, you know, I looked at it going in, and as far as where to go eat or whatever, because there weren't really any, you know, there weren't any meals or anything with the fest. And, you know, on the other side of the hotel, on the opposite side of the convention center, there is what's called the Toyota Music Factory. And I don't normally associate Toyota with music. I have Sony with music, but not Toyota. And, you know, this was this facility. And they, you know, if you look up the link in the show notes, they do have, you know, they do have concerts and live bands. Right now, it looks like a lot of cover bands. I think they, You know, the next person up is somebody who dresses up like Madonna, and does her songs. And you know, couple, and the next couple are like tribute bands or whatever, but I imagine they actually get real acts in there. And there's also one of the locations in there is a, you know, one of these new movie multiplexes where you can buy a beer. I didn't go watch any movies in it, but, and then the rest of the entertainment stuff, there were a bunch of, well, actually say in it on the site, bars and restaurants. So most of them are a combination. Well, I think all of them, you'd be able to get food. But, and I don't know, when I talked about being a home buddy, or got back from Hard Eight, I was planning to go back out, didn't go back out, and really surprised. Borden C and I went to the, Saturday night, Brazilian steakhouse there.
I didn't know you guys went to that.
Oh, yeah, man. Well, he'd heard somebody talk about it the day before, and he knew in Columbus they have like three, he said. So he knew what to expect. I didn't. I knew it was, you know, I knew going in it was like a price for everything. I mean, you just, not really a menu. Like, I guess you can order off a menu, but most people, what you do is you go in there and you pay one price for your dinner. And start off with a salad bar, an incredible salad bar, which you do not want to touch. Because, you know, everything's good. You know, I'm not saying it's, you know, not unsafe or anything. I'm just saying, you know, for your money, you want to save room. Because what they do is they give you a card, and one side's green and one side's red. And if you got the red side up, it says, yeah, don't bring any meat around. If it's green, yes, please bring me meat. And these guys walk around for skewer, and you know, it'll be a steak, but it will be that whole cut of meat on the skewer. And they have a sharp knife, and they will slice you off a chunk, and then you have a set of tongs to grab that top of the chunk of meat and put it on your plate. Or, you know, a lot of stuff is actually shish kebab style, you know, so they'll push that off the bottom. And so it's like all meat all the time at this place for one price.
Yeah, the last time I went, I was sweating when I got out of there.
Okay, so you've been there then.
Yeah, we get a discount card to Texas Day Brazil, which is it's one of those places. And so you buy it up front, and I think you get something like 12 meals for half off, but you have to use it, you know, before it expires a year later. So it's like a charity thing. So we get that every year. Actually go. And then on your birthday, I think you get half off your meal too, if you sign up for their newsletter or whatever. But yeah, it's an experience. If you've never been, it's really good. And, you know, if you just want to have the salad bar, the salad bar, like you said, is incredible. They've got all this good soup and just sushi and everything. It's good stuff.
Yeah, the sushi look. I didn't try the sushi. Mordency got some. Of course, yeah, I did grab some of the salad. You know, which I that's probably the green salad. I didn't eat much of that. You know, there were portobello mushrooms, and then, you know, fried vegetables, those were incredible. There's actually a tuna salad that was like not like anything I've ever had. And, you know, a bunch of different fancy cheeses. I love cheese. That would probably be the one thing. You know, if I was going to, you know, if I was going to say avoid the salad bar, I would not be able to resist the cheese.
Yeah, and you can go and just get the salad bar too. I think it's like half the price of what you would pay if you got the meat and everything, but some people do that, and they have they have cheaper prices than lunch. It's expensive, but to me, if you haven't been, it's worth it to go at least once. Because I took my dad on his birthday, and he had never been to anything like that before, and that was like 3 years ago, and he still talks about it.
And I don't know the particular place, but Mordency was talking about like the ones he's used to in Columbus. If you go at lunch, it's essentially the same thing, but half the price.
Yeah. It's discounted at lunchtime.
And we are both like, you know, we wish we could eat like we could 20 years ago. You know, 20 years ago, I would have been there till closing and they would have been there with pitchforks trying to get me out.
I get there and I, like you said, I try to save room for the good stuff, for the meat. And even that is like a few, after they come to my table, maybe two or three times and I can't eat anymore. It's just, I don't have the stomach like I used to.
Yeah, I filled up a lot faster than I figured. But we both did save room for dessert, which is extra. But I had the cheesecake, and oh my goodness, was that incredible.
Cappuccino is good, too. It's really good after your meal. Or espresso, yeah, whatever you like.
Yeah, they offered that. I didn't because I wanted to go home and lay down for a while.
Yeah, it makes you pretty sleepy.
And that was my trouble. I was expecting maybe, you know, I knew I needed to go back to the room and let it settle for a while, but I figured I'd jump up in an hour and hit some of the other places I hadn't hit on the strip, and never happened. I regret it now. At the time, I was thinking, oh, well, you're saving money this way. Just roll back over and you're comfortable here, you know, but man. You know, later this week, I've regretted because one of the places was there, like, no, we have 100 beers or whatever. So I'm like kicking myself that I didn't ever check that one out. Hit the Cajun place twice. I ate there that one, the first night, and then you weren't there, Minix, but we all went back out to that Friday for lunch. And good. And one thing I do want to point out, you know, the steakhouse that was the Brazilian steakhouse that was kind of pricey, but not out of the world pricey. But the rest of the stuff was a lot more reasonable than I would have expected. I looked at that, you know, looking at the Linux Fest page and saying, yeah, they got you there in the area. And there's nothing else around, and they're going to stick it to you. And it really wasn't bad. I mean, I thought, you know, you could eat fairly reasonable.
Yeah, it's, you know, those restaurants that were there, you know, I've eaten at them, like that Grimaldi's Pizza in other areas, too. And the prices are the same. So even though they have the convention center there, they don't gouge you just because they're in the area. So it's actually not that bad.
Yeah, that's what I was expected. You know, beyond looking, you know, where can I drive to? And I'd actually seen the steakhouse, and I didn't realize how close it was. It was just clear on the end of the strip. You know, I didn't know it was walking distance. It looked farther than that on the maps. You know,
that musical venue is really cool too. I went and saw a few concerts there. It's a neat building. That whole area is pretty cool. It's fairly new too. So.
Well, you know, I was going to say, if you're in, you know, the North Texas, Oklahoma Panhandle, and you just wanted a place to go, you know, take the spouse or whatever and go for a staycation for a weekend, you know, I don't think I've ever been in a place I would recommend as much for that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
And Toyota, I expect the check to be deposited by Monday. No.
I was going to bring up a few services that I've been using, if that's okay.
Yes, please do.
So I installed the Nextcloud server recently on a Lenovo machine, and I kind of went full bore as far as like wanting to be able to monitor it and see everything that's going on with the server. And so I installed, alongside the server, I installed a NetData, which you guys are probably familiar with. It has a pretty slick real-time interface for your server. It just shows you CPU usage and RAM usage and memory or storage and all that stuff, input, output. It's great. NetData And I just have it as a sub page on my web server. And I really like that. I've never used it before. And I know it's fairly common on servers now, but this is my first time using it. Another one I like that I installed is called Apticron. I kind of talked about this to Joe, maybe 52. And Apticron, APTICRON, it sends you it's real simple. It just sends you an email. You know, you set it up with your mail service on your server, SSMTP or whatever you use, and sends you a daily email, or sends me a daily email via a cron job I got. And all it tells you is what packages can be updated. And it's really simple, and it's pretty useful. Apticron is the name of that one. And the third one I installed that I really like is called LogWatch, LogWatch. And I can put all these in the mumble chat. But LogWatch is a system monitoring tool as well. And you can get as in-depth as you want or as simple as you want. But what I like about it, and it's the same way you set it up with your mail server to send you daily emails via cron job. And what I like about it is the email it sends you can format in HTML. So like I'm looking at a LogWatch email I have now, and it'll put at the top, I have a summary link, cron link, kernel link, a link to fail to ban logs, my Nginx link from my web server. And you can click on each one of those links within the email. And like if I click on disk space, it'll go down and it'll tell me, you know, you've got so much disk space. And click on cron, it'll tell me what cron jobs were ran and if there's any issues. If I click on kernel, it'll tell me like I had some CPU temperatures that were above a threshold I had set, so it had throttled it down a little bit. And it tells you, like, failed to ban. It'll tell you, you know, what URLs probed your server and if any known hacks were tried and how many times they were tried and you know, how long those URLs were banned for and how many times and just stuff like that. But it's really a useful tool. And I like how you can set it up in a cron job and just send you a daily email. And it gives you just a quick summary at the top too, but you can go really in depth with it, and it gives you all those details. And it sends me mine at 9 a.m. So when I get up in the morning, I have a LogWatch summary, you know, ready to go, and I can see everything that's happened on my web server. So those three tools I'm really enjoying: NetData, Apticron, and LogWatch. I just thought I'd give a plug to those three.
Can you add those to the show notes when you have the chance?
I'm going to do that right now.
So if I Google LogWatch, it takes me to the Arch Wiki.
Let's see here.
That's usually a pretty good thing. I mean, nobody documents stuff like Arch.
That's true.
Yeah, that's what I've heard, and Google agrees.
Yeah, and it's in the after. I mean, it's not just in the AUR. It's in all the major repositories. It's a big known tool. So, but they really work well with those daily emails with them. If you want to set up, MSMTP to send your daily server emails and then connect those to a cron job. What I like most about LogWatch, though, is just the format that you get your email in with links that you can go to relevant sections and it's all set up really nice. But I'll add all three to the show notes and the package is just called LogWatch on what's in the apps repository or Ubuntu's repository.
How big a machine did you put your Nextcloud on, or how big do you need for a Nextcloud instance?
Well, I had it on a Rock Pro 64, which, you know, is the ARM based board, and it came with 4 gigs of RAM installed already, and then I actually had it in an enclosure, a RAID enclosure. That I had taken a four drive RAID enclosure. I took two drives out of the bottom and just stuck the Rock Pro in there and ran the cables out the back. So, and it ran fine. I just decided I had gotten a better computer and I wanted to run it on this better computer. But, yeah, the Nextcloud install itself is pretty small. And if you want to run it on lower end hardware, you can use a lighter web server. I'm using Nginx, which is fairly lightweight, but you could use light TPD as well if you wanted something even lighter. I'm using MariaDB for the SQL Server and PHP. So you don't need much to get Nextcloud up and running.
Well, I'm thinking about getting a nice machine, building it up with RAM and whatnot. As I said, an i5. But I would really like to have the ability to use it both as a desktop and as the central server for my house. Very lightweight applications because there's only a single user. I need to get things arranged so that I don't have to keep duplicating functions on every system that I set up.
Oh yeah, you could definitely do that. I mean, I have 8 gigs of RAM in this machine, but even on the 4 gig Rock Pro 64, it was very rare that I saw my RAM usage go over like 50%. And the CPU that was on there, I think it's a RK3399 Rock chip, and that was plenty to run it. I never had any issue, but like kind of like you, I was a user and then a few of my family members, and they didn't use it all the time. So it was never stressed at all. But I mean, even with the machine you have now or that you're planning to get, you could run a full LAMP stack with Apache and everything and you wouldn't stress anything.
Yeah, I want to get Nextcloud up on my Scaleway cloud server. You know, well, one of the reasons just in the last week, you know, Minix, and I'll get to it, but we, you know, I took all those pictures at the Oklahoma Toy and Action Figure Museum and tried to send them to my photo bucket, and they said, nope, you don't have the storage, you got to pay us. And I said, nah, I don't think so. And found out I had plenty of space on my Google Drive, but I think on my Scaleway server, I've got, you know, enough space to put up about whatever I would want. It would be just, if a dozen people a month or whatever hit it, I don't think it's going to make any difference, you know. So I may throw those over there. I do have a video I did. A 20-minute video I did. I'm going to try to see if that'll go up on YouTube, but I'm also going to host it someplace else about the toy museum. So that link I gave you, and it's in the show notes too for the rest of folks, Minix, that's got all the still pictures. I will, you know, I'm also going to throw the video up on there because that may give people, you know, everybody a better impression of what that museum is like. But talking in circles here, but yeah, I do want to get Nextcloud up on my server in the cloud, probably use those links that I sent you last week, but I don't want to put those in the show notes till I've messed with them myself. So that hopefully that'll be for next show. It is me setting up Nextcloud in the cloud.
Yeah, the biggest challenge I had with Nextcloud wasn't specific to hardware, at least to the hardware I had, but it was my ISP. I don't know about where you guys are, but where I am, ISPs are really greedy with upload speed. So they offer download speed fairly cheaply, but like I had a 100 megabit download, but only was offered 10 megabit upload. And realistically, I got maybe 8 of that. So if you're wanting to get off of Google, which was my goal, and go to something like Nextcloud, you're not going to get the speed that you could get with Google unless you have a decent upload speed. So I had to go to the next tier up, which is a 400 megabit down, and 20 megabit up, which is about 2.4 to 2.5 megabytes upload speed. And with that, I get decent performance as far as like accessing data remotely.
Well, yeah. This is what I'm looking for is going to be strictly an in-house solution. So, and I have gigabit on most machines and 100 meg on the older boxes. But I'm looking basically to centralize my storage. Maybe put in an app cache, that kind of thing, so that when I do my updates, I can download them once over my DSL and then have a central files store for everything. Since I basically run Ubuntu, when I run an update is a lot of duplicate downloads and setup.
Yeah, so you wouldn't even have to worry about ISP speeds or anything like that.
Yeah, and a lot of, you know, my Nextcloud on the cloud would be to share stuff with other people, to share, you know, I want to set up Nextcloud on dedicated box here too, you know, just for my local stuff. Okay, I don't know. Do we have anything more to say about Linux Fest? I have some more stuff I might want to throw in my trip up and back in general briefly.
Nope.
Okay, one thing I really want to get in tonight, and this won't be the last time I mention it, ran into a guy I run into, you know, a couple times a year, at least at Linux Fest, from Kansas City, Tyler. And I guess I hadn't been monitoring the website and I'd missed the email, but there is going to be a Kansas Linux Fest this year, August 9th through 11th at the Wichita State University campus. You could have blown me over with a feather. I thought it was going to be another year without one. Same guys, you know, pretty much the maker group and the coding group and the Linux group in Wichita as 2 years ago. Setting it up. So pretty much the same thing, same deal. It's not really, hasn't been so far a venue to attract a lot of people in from out of town, except for, you know, some of the speakers that have come in. Though we really just missed Dor and his crowd, I guess 2 years ago, until they found out it was going to be Mother's Day and they were afraid for their skins if they left their wives during Mother's Day. So, I guess the organizers, they saw what day it was after they'd set it up, and you know, it's kind of hard to find a day that, you know, it's not another fest and that they can get the facilities and whatever. So, and it's early days, but if you are coming in, you should know I emailed them, you know, do you have any idea of reserving a block of rooms? They ever had before. I guess they tried it 1 year and most of the people coming in were local. So there weren't a lot of people, you know, needing a room. So, and that just created friction between them and the hotel because nobody went for it. So that's probably not something they're going to do. So I'm going to reserve my room fairly soon. Of course I'll drive. I'm only about an hour out, but I want to participate in evening activities. And the most responsible way to do that is have a hotel room and get an Uber. And really, if you're coming in and if you have any questions, please contact me. But if you're flying in, there are no hotels anywhere near the university campus. It's pretty much in a residential area. Other than a couple fast food places on campus, and there will be food trucks invited in. There's really no place to go eat. There's no place to go have a beer anywhere walking distance of the campus. The best suggestion I would have, there is a built-up area in what used to be downtown that is now called Old Town. And there is a theater. There is one brew pub down there that makes their own beer. There are several restaurants that, you know, have drinks and craft beers around there. And there's several breweries that are only open on the weekend right around there in walking distance. And a couple, you know, one place that I know of live music. You know, really, if you want to come in and have something to do in the evening and not have any hassle getting back to your room, that's the way I would go. Because the first year when it was in Wichita, I picked the cheapest room I could get. Then think I would get knifed or whatever, or got like a Ramada, and it was across town and really nothing around there. And then the first night there's usually an open source movie. One year they did the Internet's Best Boy or whatever, and the last time they did the one for RMS and Eric Raymond and all the old guys. I am not thinking. Oh, I'll think of it sometime. But, you know, I'm sorry. I thought maybe somebody thought it. They did a screening of that, but that, you know, on Friday, and that ended fairly early, and everybody went their separate ways. And then on, you know, the next night there is a wrap party sort of thing, and they've done it two years, and I assume they'll do it again at the Game Over Bar, which is one of these bars where, you know, they have a bunch of craft beers and video games and console, coin-op video games to play for free, console games, also tables and stuff. You know, we played a pretty good round of Cards Against Humanity this last year. In fact, if you go to the website, which is CandaceLinuxFest.org, unsurprisingly, if you look closely in the rotating pictures, the one from the bar, I am the guy clear on the, you know, farthest away from the camera in that shot. So, but that's the way I would do it. You know, most of, even the stuff they arranged for ends up around 9:30, 10 o'clock, something like that. So if you want to continue going on, you know, best place in Wichita to do it is Old Town, so that you don't have to, you know, so that you can walk to everything.
Revolution OS was the name of the movie.
Thank you. So, like I said, this is not the last time I'm going to mention Kansas Linux Fest. Probably remind you at least once a month until it happens. Because, you know, completely selfish reasons, I would like to see people, you know, well, I know some of the organizers and stuff, but I would, you know, I'd like to see the folks I know, and I'd like to be able to show them around Kansas a little bit. All right. Briefly, I did, like I said, I took a leisurely way up and down on the way down to Texas Linux Fest. I went by Paul's Valley in Oklahoma. And, you know, that's just a little bit off the interstate, and you could come off. I made the mistake going down of looking at the map on Google Maps and said, well, yeah, I don't need to have the phone directions going, because I can just follow, you know, I know I'm going down to Oklahoma City, and then I'll take off the on 77, and it's like, you know, there's off ramp to 77, and it that would take me to to Paul's Valley, and missed it. You know, it's like you go by, oh, there it was, But of course, you know, there's a more, you know, it's only a few miles off of 35. So you go down there and it's, I don't know. You guys maybe speak to this. I did see, like, you know, in Kansas, when the old road is superseded by a new road, you know, rename the old road or whatever, but it was like, you know, you go going down that section of 35, and I think it went on into Texas. It was like, you know, on, if you're on 35, it's 35 and 77, but if you're on old 77, it also says 77. So that I found a little confusing. But Paul's Valley is about the size of the county seat here. That's apparently the county seat there. Lot more interesting restaurants, though, than what we have. You know, several, of course, further down south. Four Southwestern-style restaurants. Two Italian. One was more fast food. I was kind of in the mood for Italian. Still am, but first thing when I came off the interstate or when I got to Paul's Valley was got to Tio's, and you know that was really good. I'm not sorry that was my pick, but I came to that first, and I was running late, getting, you know, about down there probably 2 hours later or an hour later than I thought I would be at that point, and I was ready to eat, so. Had a really good meal there. I can't recommend it enough. Then went to the Toy and Action Figure Museum there in Paul's Valley, Oklahoma. And I know Minix was really interested in seeing the pictures. I linked to that on my drive that I talked about. Also, I filmed the movie. Kind of cut me off in mid-sentence. I think maybe the camera is set to only record for 20 minutes. I'm not sure. But I'd covered kind of everything, so you know that I'll get that uploaded.
Yeah, that place, you posted a picture of it, and that looks like right up my alley. I'd love to see a video.
And you know, if you want to look it up, the reason I knew about it, a podcaster I follow, Justin Scard, had gone through there, you know. You know, about a week before that, or 2 weeks maybe before I headed down to Texas. And that's the only reason I knew about it. And I looked it up. So, oh, man, that is right on the way. I am definitely going. So if you look up Justin Scard on YouTube, you can easily find the video from a couple weeks ago. Like I said, I'll try to get my... put it up on YouTube, and if they accept it, you know, I'll post a link here later. But you know, if you go to my drive link that's already in the show notes, you know, sometime this weekend I'll get it uploaded there. Rest of the pictures I did manage to fit on Photo Bucket. You know, I said earlier I tried to put them there. Photo Bucket says no, that's way more than what you get with a free account. So I may be pushing what I can put on a Photo Bucket now. And a few of the pictures didn't go through, so I've got that page open. I can go back and, make note of which pics didn't go and resend them. And there's several there. The ones that all came out black is when I used my big, huge, long, foot-long telephoto lens on the camera. Got a new camera. It's got more buttons than I understand. So the big long telephoto lens is not the same brand as the camera. So you have to switch to manual. And apparently I didn't get enough light. I could see part. You know, I can see the outline of a picture in there. So I bet it. You know, I can run it through GIMP and get something back. But I was just kind of up in the hotel room and seeing what I could see with this big long lens that, you know, I can reach out a mile or two with. That explains the black ones. And like I said, there's a few, few completely missing. Let's see, on the way back, I'd see it all the way down. And again, some of the podcasters I follow, or not podcasters, YouTubers I follow that travel around the country, you know, they make a big deal. Bucky's in Texas. I'm sure you Texas guys know all about it. Essentially, for anybody listening who doesn't, essentially, it's a convenience store the size of a Walmart supercenter. And, you know, got all kinds of things. A lot of it is food that is absolutely no good for you. A big center section, you get barbecue. Didn't try that. I did try their fudge, which is incredible. I've been treating myself to, I got a box of like six divergent pieces of fudge. Didn't find out they do have a box of little bitty pieces of fudge, all, you know, every one of their flavors. But I missed that. But, you know, I have been having one piece of fudge for breakfast every day since. I've got one left, and like I said, you know, horrible thing for nutrition. But oh my goodness, is that good. You know, the rest of the stuff I got there, you know, were peanuts and sugar, and not much, you know. That I could probably, you know, there's one thing kind of like a big praline that they were, you know, peanuts, but they had real pralines too. that wasn't bad. The candy covered peanuts, yeah, I finished them. They weren't the best thing I've ever had. But, you know, you go in there and, yeah, I want this. Got the jerky. They have these, like, walls full of jerky. And, you know, different, the jerky's kind of, they make is kind of marinated. You know, I'm used to having seasoned jerky, you know, the beef seasoned before. And it seems like, you know, they just pour different sauces over it. It's not bad. It's not, you know. I think I prefer the homemade jerky I've had, but it, you know, isn't bad. Also on the way back, I'd seen it going down. This is the almost the furthest south thing in the panhandle that I saw was the Windstar World Casino. And it's like, you go around the perimeter and it's like, you know, it goes from the Taj Mahal to the Windsor Palace or whatever of Big Ben.
I think that's the biggest casino in the world, isn't it?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, if the theming inside is like outside, you know, if I was going to go to a casino, I might go there, but it, you know, it's kind of like you drive around it. Yeah. Oh yeah. That's not tacky at all. But I wanted to get pictures. Now the Bucky's, I did get pictures, but I think I took them all with my cell phones. They're not uploaded yet. They will be eventually. I want to be sort of more unobtrusive. But I took the casino pictures with my camera. I just drove around the parking lot, never went inside. But yeah, I guess it, you know, like I said, it's interesting. It's kind of in your face.
It's definitely not subtle.
No, not subtle at all. And, you know, part of the stuff, theming is around the parking garage, and then there'll be an open space, and I, you know, it's almost like a grid, you know, you can see through it, but they project onto it. You know, it's like here, you know, here's these acts coming in the next month.
Yeah, yeah, I've been there once. It's just as tacky on the inside. We saw the comedian Jim Gaffigan there some time ago.
Okay, yeah. If it's on the inside like it is on the outside, I have got to go there sometime.
It is.
The hotel part is actually kind of nice. When we go, if you're a member of like this Players Club deal they have, they send you these things in the mail where you get a free room. I think Thursday, it's not the weekend. It's Sunday. Thursday and Sunday or something like that. Weird days, but what we'll do is we'll go up there and just hang out in the hotel Sunday and come back early Monday morning. But it's free, so we just take advantage of it.
50. I'm looking at your picture of the Action Figure Museum, and there's an outside shot with a hearse in front of the museum.
That's it.
That's the 50, right?
You saw that. You saw the hearse. Daddy missed out on it.
Yeah, I wish I would have thought to go and see it, but I just didn't think of it. I saw the picture on Voxer of you guys in front, in the back of it. Next time I'll catch it.
Yeah, that's right, a good picture.
Yeah, that casino, most of the acts that go there are, you know, like musical acts or like big names at one time, you know, like maybe 20 years ago or something. And so that's usually the kind of concerts they have there, like old country stars or old R&B and Motown artists, I think, go there a lot, stuff like that. And it's a neat little music venue because I guess Ed's been there, but it's not too big, so you can, you know, you're fairly close to the stage.
Well, I would probably like that. I remember a few years ago, I didn't get to either concert, but in Wichita, I don't know if it's it's like the farewell tour of the Stones or, you know, one of the big bands. And then opposite the same weekend was like, you know, 20 one hit wonder acts, and the second one was more appealing to me.
KC and the Sunshine Band.
They were probably there.
Yeah. That's the kind of acts they have at that one star, as far as musical acts go.
Yeah. They're not younger either.
No, but you know, there's some of that stuff that I really like still, and I'd go to see, you know, and most of those bands, they only have like one or two at most of the original members, and the rest are session musicians and stuff.
Well, right. As time tends to take its toll on rock musicians a lot harder than it takes its toll on the rest of us.
This is true. Well, fellas, I got to head out. I'm going to keep listening, but I'm at work, so I'm about to get off. I need to wrap it up. I just want to tell everybody thanks for having me on. I had a good time.
Yeah, I was looking at the rest of my links. You know, maybe we should go to Honky Magoo's, because a lot of mine are just links. You know, some of them were, or a lot of them were postponed from last time. They could be postponed again. I did want to mention, because I'm, you know, gone last weekend, and then, you know, the next weekend I've been concentrating on that and not too many projects at home. But we talked about, I got Diet Pie running on my Pine 64, got Pine Hole set up, but ran for about a day before it overheated and locked up. And my Pine 64 is actually in a little pine case. So I'm going to take it out of the case and try it again. If not, I'll try, you know, either try cooling or try it on a different SBC. Other thing, the way home from the airport, and this was this was from PenguinCon, so 4 weeks ago. Went by, you know, needed to pick stuff up, so went by the Walmart on the way home, not my local Walmart. Found that they were trying to get rid of their final Arcade 1-Up machines from last fall, and they dropped them to 150. I bought two of the three that they had. I actually went back the next day because I wanted to go home, which was stupid. I should have got them then. You know, I wanted to check my local Walmart. Maybe are they throwing theirs out? You know, or are they going cheap online? I didn't know about it. And, you know, nobody else seemed to have them or sell them. Well, I mean, you still get them from Arcade 1-Up, but I mean, not that price. So I got two, thinking I would keep one, stick it in my attic, you know, or, you know, either because they were still going $250 on eBay used, either turn it over real quick or keep it a few years, then turn it over as nostalgia, or, you know, and I did have ideas, you know, probably play it as is, then do the upgrades we talked about last fall to unlock other games on the board, and then finally just gut it and turn it into a RetroPie machine. You know, but I got the, you know, started put together next week or next few days, and noticed one of them was open box. And I didn't notice it while I was there in the store. I would have said, no, give me the other one there. And sure enough, I put it all together. And I thought, well, maybe they just returned it because they didn't want it. Because everything was still, most of the stuff was still in the shrink wrap. But I'm assuming what they did is they pulled out all the electronic components, plugged them together, didn't work, and they put it back in the box and took it back. So I put it all together, plugged it in, turned it on. And, you know, I can get a buzz from a speaker, so it's getting power through, you know, and the power goes through the LCD and then back to controls where the speaker is. So it's getting his connections are good. You know, I've checked connections. It's just borked. Have tried to go in and, you know, to their tech support, you know, it's, traveling and stuff, I hadn't much time, but I did try it the other day, and it was like 50 minutes of your call is very important to us, and gave up. So probably try that again, but I may, you know, probably go back with, rather than try to get any redress from it, you know, go with my original plan of gutting it and turning it into a RetroPie system. The other one's still sitting there in the box. Like I said, you know, if anybody is anybody listening to the podcast, and I wanted to mention before I went down to Texas in case somebody in Texas was interested, you know, if a listener or a podcaster that I know or whatever is interested, I would sell it for what I have in it. Otherwise, you know, eventually it's going up on eBay. So that was one thing I'd really wanted to mention the last show, didn't get to. Grumpy Cat died. I have the link in there. You know, rest in peace, Grumpy Cat. Got my Atomic PC. That is the Atom-based Intel alternative to the Raspberry Pi. Even though the listing said, you know, Atomic Pi with peripherals, I guess I didn't read. You know, I thought that was one of the daughter boards or something, but really didn't. The only peripheral might have come with, if you want to call it that, it looks like a real-time clock battery. So, you know, there, as it is, there's no easy way to connect it to a power supply. So, I mean, I'm certain I can get a barrel connector power supply for a Odroid, get a female barrel connector receptacle, you know, solder a couple jumper wires to it and plug that into the correct I/O and get it up and running. I mean, the company says, yeah, we're, you know, the daughter board and all that stuff is coming, but it doesn't seem to be out there yet. Other thing.
I've heard some nasty things about the Atomic Pi. In that they may be motherboards for a failed robotics project that are already produced and are not actually in production.
Well, that wouldn't surprise me. That would certainly explain why there's no power connector soldered into it.
They also are using this batch to leverage a Atomic Pi 2 revamp, which will be more like a Tinker board, and more significantly expensive. It may be that the daughter boards or whatnot have been produced in review quantities and not necessarily in industrial quantity.
Well, that wouldn't surprise me. I know Dor has got his, and I think it's talked about on the Mini PC show, but I'm not caught up. So I don't know if he has his up and running. I mean, if everything on the specs is correct, you know, there's no reason I shouldn't be able to make it work. You know, jerry rig it. So it works, but yeah, it's too bad if there's not going to be any more. But with the discrepancies in pricing, I think I paid like 50 for mine rather than 35, without really any, you know, without any peripherals, and I should have read the listing better. But you know, it says with peripherals, you would expect be peripherals, but I'm sure I'll be able to get it up and running and talk about it on the show. If not, well, you know, my bad. Fool me once, you know, and fool me twice, and I've been a fool many times.
It is a good because it's x86, it's better supported under Linux than a lot of the Atom boards of unknown support. You just may have to use it as a hacker machine more than anything.
Well, really, the place I was going to use it was with the you know, with the one up, and I think I mentioned coming back from PimpCon, the guy that did the talk on RetroPie said, if you get just the RetroPie image and install it, then everything works. But if you install RetroPie on top of you install Linux and then just get the RetroPie software and install it, and the only thing that works easily is consoles, CoinOps work. Consoles really don't. I mean, you can fiddle with it, make them work, but they don't work out of the box. And that was the thing I've seen on I've seen YouTube articles putting RetroPie on the Atomic Pie. Same thing. The coin op games work. The console games don't. So I think there's ways around it. It's just you got to work a little harder. One thing I think I want to throw out there tonight. Something Randy Noseworthy posted in MeWe is Fostodon.org. So it's a Mastodon instance that, you know, you can join without having to host your own server. I am now at 5150 at Fostodon.org. There's a bunch of people we know already on there. Randy mentioned Claudio and Claude 2, but most of the people I really hang out with are a lot of the people are already on there. So I would suggest that as an alternative to MeWe. I hate after Google Plus seeing the whole FOSS podcaster community getting fractured, you know, going different places. But, you know, I've been really impressed with Fostodon, because it reminds me of IRC back in the old days. You know, you click on the tab for the site, and there's just a bunch of activity, a bunch of posts. And actually, if I go back, you know, if you go back to Ogcast Planet, the hash Ogcast Planet on Freenode, in the last few months, activity has really picked up. You know, there are a bunch of people on there, you know, as they go for their work day to day, you know, typing, I'm working on this, I'm working on that, this has happened, that's happened. You know, for a while there, it was kind of dead. And it's gone back to having a lot more activity. But, you know, that definitely that's what the Fostodon reminded me of immediately was Hash Ogcast Planet back in the day. And you know, essentially what I did is create an account. Then I looked at every, you know, I went to Randy Noseworthy's account and essentially cobbed everybody out of there that, you know, to follow that I knew, you know, went page by page through the people he was following. And then, oh yeah, I know that person, and added them to my list. So, and he told, you know, I told him that, and he said, well, that's the way I started. I found somebody else's follower list and did the same thing, or following list. So yeah, if you're not on, if you don't have a Mastodon account, I really recommend, trying it out on Fostodon. The other thing, John O'Bacon has started a new podcast on his own. I assume he's still on Bad Voltage, but it's johnobacon.com/conversations. And apparently it's not so much tech, but, you know, we talked about, you know, some of the stuff in conferences being how to make your way in the FOSS community professionally. And apparently, you know, business solutions and stuff like that is kind of, at least from the first episode, I haven't listened to it yet, but the impression of the review I saw was that, yeah, he's talking about how to navigate FOSS businesses rather than, you know, how to set up this server and that server. Okay. Oh, and I have been talking nonstop, and Honky still had some stuff. Sorry, Honky. Or thought you did. Did you erase it?
Honky, you there?
Yep, I'm here. Sorry. Sorry, I just kind of nodded off for a second. It's been a long day. My links that I put in there, I actually took out for right now.
Okay, sorry about that. I have gone long yet again.
No, that's fine. I had taken them off like near the beginning of the show. What they were, what mostly were, they're just two random links that I found that I thought would be interesting to talk about. How a lot of people seem to be switching over to RISC-V over ARM processors.
Well, if you don't mind doing like you did last time, is setting up show notes for 128, so we can copy the stuff we didn't get to over. You know, next show we won't be, as far as I know, talking about an event, so we can actually get to clear all that stuff out.
Yep, no problem.
By the way, I've added a basic explanation of Amiga OS, as I understand it. While the 3.1.4 update is new, there are at least three companies that have what they call Amiga OS some version due to licensing. And then there's Morph OS, which is something else, which I don't really know very much about.
Yeah, the link that I had in the show notes, and like I said, we'll get to it next show. There's a new OS that will run on classic Amigas, like the 2500, And yeah, Netminer, you probably know more about than I do. I'm glad to have your input straightening us out, because the Amiga name, you know, was actually bought a while back by people who were you know, making they were selling the whole computer, but essentially what they had on it was a Linux distribution with, you know, with the Amiga OS's it was Linux, but it looked like Amiga OS, and they put it in like a retro Amiga case. And then I talked about link there to new Amigas, and my understanding, you know, they're running on a chip that's like, you know, firmware to emulate anything. So it's a modern chip, and then they flash firmware, I don't know, or run software layer. So, you know, this new chip responds like it was, you know, an old Amiga. And I was thinking, yeah, I'd love to get one of those, but I want it unlocked so I could flash it to whatever I want.
There are a number of Amiga accelerators that work the same, both 68,000 and there is a PowerPC coprocessor subspecies of Amiga enhancement, and from what I was reading, this is much the same as the PowerPC enhancement, made into a new or a regenerated Amiga system. I don't know how they run classic Amiga stuff, whether it's like the old Mac software where they had a translation layer from 68,000 to PowerPC, etc.
Well, I have literally a lab's worth of PowerPC all-in-ones. This is not the iMac. This is this big, huge 17-inch CRT that had like the huge cage around it, so that the signal couldn't get out and hit the motherboard right under it. I always thought about, you know, at one time I thought about, yeah, put an LCD and a PC motherboard in one. I still might eventually, but you know, these things, man, they must have weighed a good 50 pounds. And when I was working tech for the school, I had to, you know, my lab to fix stuff was a block and a half away from the, you know, where these things were. And every time one died that I had, you know, I'd have to tote it back. Should have had the hearse then. That'd been great for it. But, you know, it was like, well, I've mentioned this, but you know, you tie the keyboard and the mouse around your neck, so that would be trying to strangle you the whole time. That, you know, you're carrying this 50-pound computer a block and a half. Yeah, no laughter. I've told that story too many times.
I can imagine it. We used to deal with a lot of the donated iMacs and whatnot when I was working at a Somerville internet cafe.
Well, iMacs aren't bad. You could they had the handle on the top. You could put one in each hand and do, you know, you work them like kettlebells. But these things, man.
Well, we got all kinds of iMacs of 68,000, PowerPC, whatever, anything that had gotten too old for its current user and could have been used as a tax write-off.
And over on MeWe in the last week, Joel, he's been looking for a good Linux that'll run on PowerPC. So I've been watching that for the same reason. You know, maybe put, you know, set one of them in here and do something with it. I mean, you can't, they're getting to the age you really can't expect much out of them, but it's nice to have some of these older machines and fire them up. And by comparison, that's not really that old a machine.
Well, I don't know if your Linux supports X2Go. Sounds like they'd make a nice X terminal.
I don't know if they make a 32-bit version.
Well, he's probably running an older system. I know that X2Go is based on a...
Very hacked version
of X, so it may be when he finds his Linux that it has an X2Go built in.
Yeah, I do remember now. I installed it on that ST5000, so there is a 32-bit version.
Yeah, well, you could always tuck a Raspberry Pi or whatever underneath to provide the processor power.
Well, right. You know, I said, you know, you could gut it and, you know, it's like, I still have three of my four TRS-80s Model 3s. So it's like, yeah, if you could live with a 13-inch 4x3 screen, you know, yeah, you could gut that and put a keyboard in it and use the drive base for your storage and stuff. And, you know, I'd thought about that. It's just, you know, at the time I first started thinking about that, yeah, 13-inch screen, that's not too bad. And then, PPC all-in-one 17-inch screen, that wouldn't be so bad. And now, you know, we've got 30-inch screens, it's like, yeah, I don't think I'm willing to make that kind of sacrifice just for nostalgia.
Well, if they've got Ethernet capability, they'd make a nice console for whatever single board you want to run.
Well, that's one thing I will give Mac. They were all, you know, even if it was just Apple talk, and really that was on the, not the Macs, but the, you know, the Apple IIs. But I mean, Apple was all over networking long before Microsoft really made that a priority. You know, all my old Macs, you know, connect them to a router with an Ethernet cable and they're all up. And we're, you know, wasn't built, you know, took years and years for networking to be built into the OS on PC.
Yeah, I used to work with the guys who formed FTP Software, which was one of the early MS-DOS networking support companies. You want to network your Windows 3 box, they would hand you, either Mosaic, whatever it was, and a package that would turn your DOS machine into a networkable machine. Of course, they got run over like many people did when Windows 95 came out, but the fellow that was running it, or a lot of the people that was running it, were real good friends of mine.
Yeah, I got a couple funny stories. We got the guy I worked for. I mean, I worked freelance. I wasn't, I would do jobs for him, but they're freelance jobs. And, when Windows for Workgroups came out, everybody called it Windows 3.1. And then Microsoft actually came out with Windows 3.1 that did not have networking support. And, you know, so I show up and says, yeah, here's this Windows software. I need to set up a network for these guys. And I said, there's no networking in this. And he says, yeah, it's Windows 3.1. And I said, yeah, you're about a month behind. Everybody was calling Windows for Workgroups 3.1, you know, a month ago, until Microsoft came out with Windows 3.1, did not have networking in it. And that's why you got it so cheap. You know, he was saying, yeah, look how cheap I got this. And I, you know, I knew immediately. And of course, you know, when he looked it up and found out he was wrong, of course, it was all my fault.
Well, yeah, that's how come Windows for Workgroups was Windows 3.11. It was Windows 3.11, not, and Windows 95 was Windows 4, Chicago.
Right, and another time, I mean, this wasn't a couple weeks later. Yeah, I need you to set up a network, and, you know, here's the hub. I looked at, man, this is a USB hub. And he's like, what's a USB hub? And of course, that was my fault too.
Well, I have to get back to using my Pentium 1 and FreeDOS. I'd like to get it networked up at least in a limited way. Believe it or not, it has package management and package updates if you can get it on an Ethernet network. But I'd want to do probably do it on a very limited basis of some kind. Maybe sharing a connection with through one of my Linux boxes.
Well, we're dragging the show out, but, you know, and I've told the story, I think, but back in the day, you know, I talked about how I was impressed, you know, how Apple got into networking early on. So I had a couple Macs at the house, which I finally got on my network once I built a home network. And then, of course, you had the early Apple network was Apple Talk, which would work on the old Apple IIs. And I had actually an old Apple IIG, which, you know, you could boot to a 3.5-inch disk. And for all practical purposes, it was the graphical Macintosh operating system. Thing is, once you had that up and running, it didn't have enough memory or anything to run anything else. You could do the OS, but that was it. But I had, you know, the old Macs had both AppleTalk and Ethernet adapters, and there was software, you know, get the two talking to each other. So one of my goals was to get the Apple II on the internet. Never got it done.
Yeah. Somebody's actually got a Raspberry Pi package where you can do Telnet from basically any serial equipped machine, 8-bit, whatever. And it uses a modified AT command set. And your Raspberry Pi acts as a modem to the internet and does the routing based on the input you give it from your PC, which thinks it's talking to a dial-up modem.
All right, guys, I hate to do this, but it's getting real late.
Yeah, you're right. We've been dragging this out. Honky, you want to play us out?
Sure. Our next recording date will be... hold on, I'm going to switch back. June 21st, 2019. Our music is Downright, provided by Klaatu and Brome. We'd like to thank Delwyn for the use of the Mumble server. We'd also like to thank 000 Web Hosting for our web hosting. Finally, we would like to give a special thanks to Father Finch, Tony Bemis, for all their help and support over the years. I have been Honky Magoo. With me tonight has been Ed.
Yes, thanks.
5150.
So long, folks, and, you know, special shout out to Minix and Ed who joined us this evening.
Absolutely. And Joe?
Yeah, thank you again.
And Netminer.
It's a been an extended pleasure.
Good night, all.
Hello, Honky.
Evening, Ed Miner. Good evening, Ed and Minix.
How you doing? Do I sound okay?
Yeah, you sound pretty good.
Good. My name's Danny. I post to the Mealy page sometimes.
Oh, Danny Meeks?
Yeah. I got to meet Joe and 50 at Texas Linux Fest this past weekend, and we had a good time.
Awesome.
Yeah. I thought I'd jump on with you guys this evening, if that's all right.
Talk oh, absolutely.
About it a little bit. Okay, cool.
Hey, you're welcome all the time.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate it. I'm trying to hurry and eat my dinner before the show starts.
Don't worry. Our starting time is mostly theoretical.
Okay.
Ed, how you doing? I have a question, guys. I'm thinking about getting a new desktop. Either AMD or an i5. I'm wondering whether I should still go with an Intel chip.
I currently just set up a little i5 server. Not a new generation. I think it's maybe a couple of generations back. Quad core i5. I'm enjoying it, but it's just a server. I don't even have a desktop on it. So last time I had an AMD chip was 15 years ago. So I really don't have any input on that. But I heard Ryzen is really good. And it's affordable.
No, I'd be going with an APU, something like an A8-7600 mini, or I'd be going with an i5 like 3470 or 4570.
So you'd be depending on the chips, the graphics on the chip, not like an external GPU.
Well, on the 7600, definitely, because it's a micro system. On the i5 system, I'd be relying on it. It's three-headed capability, but then again, I don't game. I basically YouTube.
Howdy, folks. Everybody hear me?
Evening, 50.
Hey, 50. This is Danny. Good to hear from you, man.
Yeah, I heard you on Tilt, so I recognized the voice. And
yeah, great meeting you at the festival.
Thanks, I appreciate that. And evening to Ed as well.
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Very well, thank you.
Yeah, I hear you good.
Yeah, you sounded a little rough earlier, but that's great.
Ed and Minix, I don't know if you guys have gotten a link to the show notes yet, but I just posted it in the Mumble chat. I can also post it in the IRC as well, but feel free to add your own notes if you want to.
Okay. Yeah, I don't really got any links or anything. I was going to talk about Texas Linux Fest a little bit and some of the classes we went to and maybe a few projects I got going on Linux related.
Well, yeah, I figured you guys would want to join in when we talked about Texas Linux Fest.
Hey, 50, have you been watching any of the DC Universe shows? I've heard you talk about them before.
Yeah, well, I had plans. First thing I got home before I went to bed was to watch Swamp Thing, but I had to wait till the next... I was wiped, so I waited till the next day. I really liked it. I was kind of waiting for Joe to get here, but did find out the reason why it's already canceled.
Oh, I haven't heard that. I haven't started it yet, but I didn't hear it was already canceled.
Well, go ahead, and if Joe catches up, let him know. I know he's interested in that sort of stuff. Apparently, whatever state it's filmed in, I'm probably wrong. I think it was North Carolina. But a lot of these shows, the way they get made is they get taxpayer rebates to, like, fund half the production because they figure, well, we'll make it back up. You know, all the production people and the actors and all that stay in here. You know, they'll spend more money than what we give them. but I the number I heard being thrown around was like the state was going to give them $40 million, and the production budget for the year was for the season was $80 million, just to come there. And after they started production and stuff, somebody in the state said, "Oh, whoa, we made a huge clerical error, and it's going to be like 10% of that." You know, and so DC, they were on the for the rest of it. I don't know what kind of legal ramifications. I mean, I would think if you wrote down $40 million on a piece of paper, somebody'd be able to hold you to that. But, you know, but with the bureaucracy and everything, you probably can't sue the whole entire state. So that's what happened. It's not that the people at DC are having any kind of trouble with the, you know, with making money on the service. It's not that WB, who bought DC out, is going to come in with their own service and then want to kill DC as a competitor, both of which have been thrown around. It's that, you know, if they're paying for it out of their own pocket, they can't make any money off of it. So that's why they truncated this season from 13 shows to 10. It is because, you know, now if there's a lot of fan support, you know, maybe they'll find another deal in another place or something. You know, I didn't realize that they weren't doing the whole thing on a back lot somewhere. You'd think for a lot of that stuff with the FX, you know, you wouldn't just be able to go out in the middle of some swamp someplace and do it.
Yeah, that's weird for them to cancel a series before anybody's even seen it. I guess that makes sense, though, from what you found out.
Well, it's not the first time a sci-fi series has been canceled even before the first episode. The spinoff to Babylon 5 actually was canceled before the first episode was aired.
Oh, I didn't even know that had a spinoff. I was a huge fan of Babylon 5 when it aired.
Yeah, there was a spinoff. There was a like Legend of the Rangers, which was a meant to be a series and got, you know, the pilot did dismal ratings, but they put it up against something like the Super Bowl. So what do you expect? And there were you can get them on DVD. There are at least two or three movies, even one as much as 10 years after the end of Babylon 5, that they put out.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Joe.
Evening, Joe.
Sorry, I'm late.
We were just talking about you. I was telling everybody I found out today why, or tomorrow, yesterday maybe, why Swamp Thing, the season got hugely truncated and it's already been canceled after the first episode.
I didn't know it was canceled. I knew it was truncated, and I thought it was because of tax reasons.
Yeah, that's it. I was just telling you, huge tax rebate. You know, it's not like they're not telling them you don't have to pay taxes in the state. It's pretty much, here's a check for half the production cost if you will produce this in our state and bring all your people in, and they'll be eating here and staying in hotel rooms and buying stuff and all that. And which whatever state, I want to say North Carolina, I'm not sure. It's one of the East Coast southern states where it was being filmed. You know, they had an agreement for like $40 million from the state, and production cost was for the season was estimated at or budgeted at $80 million. So, I mean, they were, you know, half the cost of producing the series for the season was being footed by the state. And, then after they started production, the state comes back and says, yeah, we made some kind of clerical error. We can only give you 10% of what we said we were going to give you.
Yeah, but why the cancellation?
Well, just because nobody's footing the cost now. Assuming it's hugely popular, you know, may by the end of the season, if there's a letter writing campaign or something like has been done with other shows, they could, you know, if they could find somebody else to underwrite half the cost, you know, certainly I would say it'd be moving, you know, if they did it, or they would be doing less effects. I'm surprised after watching the first episode, it looked to me like most of that stuff must have been done on a soundstage. I wouldn't think you'd be able to do all the FX just going out in the middle of the swamp somewhere. But, you know, later episodes maybe not be so FX heavy.
Right. Well, maybe. It's hard to say. I mean, anytime you do Swamp Thing, you have to expect that there's going to be some kind of effects cost.
Right. My general view, you know, compared to other stuff they've done, you know, this is more of a straight up superhero show. Well, I mean, I guess you have the horror aspect, but I mean, it's closer to the CW stuff than it is to Doom Patrol.
I'm in the middle of watching the 1990 series of Swamp Thing. You guys remember that?
Yeah, I just grabbed it again. I'm going to end up watching it. And I don't know if I'm going to watch the movies, but I vaguely remember the old one, which is why I wanted to watch it again. And one of our listeners helped me grab Parker Lewis Can't Lose. I don't know if anybody remembers that. It was a Canadian TV show from the early 90s.
No, I've never seen it.
I remember it. I don't think I ever really watched it.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat as 50.
The 90s Swamp Thing, though, it's corny. It's more like an 80s series than anything recent, but it's entertaining. And actually, the effects are really good. The practical effects for the Swamp Thing and for Dr. Arcane's monsters and experiments. Actually quite well done. It's just the writing and the acting is kind of bad.
Now, was that available on regular TV? Because I remember there being a series, but I don't think I ever saw it. Okay, that explained why I never saw it.
I think it was Sci-Fi Channel.
Some of it's pretty dark and grim for that time, too. I'm not sure what channel it originally came on. To me, it looks like something you'd see on UPN or, you know, Channel 21 back in the day.
Possible. It might predate Sci-Fi Channel.
Yeah. There is an animated series, too, it looks like. I didn't see that.
Yeah, I don't remember watching the animated series, and I don't know who has it still to be able to grab it.
Okay, Swamp Thing was on USA, and okay, then later syndicated on Sci-Fi. The only Swamp Thing comics I read were the Alan Moore stuff, and I really liked those.
Yeah, every once in a while I'll see like a preview for a new show and look, yeah, it's one of those cable channels that hasn't wised up and added themselves to a streaming network yet.
Did they cancel Doom Patrol? Is there going to be a second season?
It looks like there's going to be a second season.
I really enjoyed that. It was weird, but that's kind of why I liked it.
Yeah, it was different than the rest of the superhero stuff that's out there now. A little bit more relatable.
Yeah, it like broke the fourth wall a lot, and it was had some good humor. I like Titans too, but I think I like Doom Patrol a little bit better.
Oh yeah, I think that's the general consensus that, yeah. Well, there's a few people out there didn't particularly like Titans. I did. I want to see the second half of Titans, so or second season, but definitely Doom Patrol far and away, and I also liked Umbrella Academy.
I haven't watched Umbrella Academy.
Yeah, Umbrella Academy is really good.
Yeah, I liked it too. I saw there's a new series called The Boys coming out on Amazon, and I read those comics.
Is that the one where like the kid's father leaves them a book or something like that, and it connects them with their father or something? I want to say I saw an ad for it, but I think I'm. What's it about? Let's go that with that.
Well, if it's based on the comics was, I believe there was like a team of mercenaries controlled by like some kind of shadow organization connected to the government or something, and they were injected with a serum that made them like super strong and super fast, and their whole job was to police the superheroes that existed on the Earth. So like if they got out of hand or went rogue, they sent in the boys to take care of any like rogue superheroes and stuff.
Wow, that's completely different than what I was thinking of. But that sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, the comics are really good.
Now, Honky, I do know the one that you're talking about, and it's I was looking forward to that one too. So,
now, has anybody watched? I think it was called Good Omens.
No, I watched it. I've seen the previews though.
Yeah, I've got it on my watch list. I want to see it. It looks cool.
Yeah, about four episodes in, and it's really good.
Yeah, that's good.
I've been looking forward to it. I guess Terry Gilliam was co-writer on that. They're saying there probably won't be a second season because he's not around to write another book, and they've kind of committed to, you know, unless Amazon just completely disregards the wishes of the remaining author, they're already doing some more of his stuff, so it's not likely they're going to want to do that. Unfortunately, they're not just going to go off and write their own second season.
Yeah, I thought it was Neil Gaiman.
Yeah, you may be right there.
He's the guy who also did American Gods, and was it Stardust that was the movie?
I need to get caught up on American Gods. I watched part of the first season, and that was it.
Is the second season out?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is. I've watched like the pilot and wanted to watch the rest of it.
Okay. Well, the first season was good. It followed the book pretty well.
The book was fantastic.
Oh, yeah. I love the book.
And Ed and Minnick, since you started joining us, this is kind of what we do is we talk stuff popular entertainment or whatever. You know, for a while before we actually drop into the show, and Honky, you usually cut that off and put it at the end, right?
Yeah, we actually used to do it a lot after the show, but if we do it before the show, then you know, other people get to hear it.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Okay, I just didn't want you guys to be surprised. Hey, it's 20 minutes after the show was supposed to start, and we haven't started yet. So, actually, we're still pretty early.
Not much else I've been watching, just that the Swamp Thing, and I watched an old vampire show. I don't know if you guys remember this, called Forever Night. Remember
yeah,
that one?
I really enjoyed that one. That was on the air, but I kind of found it lost some rewatchability.
Yeah, this was my first time watching it, and I loved it. I thought it was great. I had never even heard of it before.
Yeah, well, I was going through some classics, too. I mean, I rewatched all of Red Dwarf. I rewatched Dark Angel. I'm trying to make it through The Big Bang Theory.
Yeah, I had a hard time with that one. I watched part of the first season. Maybe it gets better. I don't know. But I wasn't very entertained with The Big Bang Theory.
Yeah, well, some of it's okay, and then some of it's pointless nerdiness.
Yeah, it seemed to be just referencing nerd culture just for the sake of it, instead of, you know, like that was the joke, instead of there actually being a joke to me.
Yeah.
But yeah, that demon, that Forever Night was great. And there's a movie that came on before it called Nick Night, and I haven't seen that one yet.
That may have been maybe repackaging of the pilot. I don't know. But yeah, Forever Night was, if not my favorite, certainly one of my favorites back in the day. And actually, there was an homage to Forever Night in the first scene of Angel.
That's another show I need to watch. I haven't seen yet.
And in Forever Night, he drives a green I think like 59, yeah, old classic ragtop Cadillac, and in Angel And I think just because they probably picked the first cart looks similar, he's got like a convertible, I think 68 green satellite. By the way, I want that car. But you know, so he's going along after fighting some guys and just jumps in the car, and it's a Cadillac. Says, "Oh, wrong car."
That's the one with David Boreanaz, that Angel.
Yes, the Buffy spinoff.
Oh, okay.
And you that know, was my really, favorite show back in yeah, the day.
I really wanted to be interested in Angel. It's just, I don't know, it got pretty bad from my perspective with Christmas. No, that wasn't her name. What was her name? She played the character Christmas in The Expendables. Charisma Carpenter.
Yeah, she was in Buffy, right?
Yeah, and she switched over to Angel, and it just, I don't know, got a little too campy for me. And well, I know Spike went over there, too.
So my big thing with Angel was just by, like, the last season or so, it just really, really jumped the shark. But
a little
I like,
bit.
Yeah. They, when all of a sudden they're in charge of the demon lawyer law office or whatever.
Right.
Wasn't there something where his son?
Yeah, his son was fast aged or something. I can't remember all the details because, like I said, I didn't really watch all of it. The only thing I found really interesting was how the final episode led straight into the comics. They did the same thing with Buffy, and that was good for both of them.
So Buffy was one of those shows that I thought was good, and I wound up powering through all of them, but there was way too much of like the teen drama type stuff.
That's why that's kind of what drove me off. I started the first season, and oh man, so much teen stuff. Like, I would have enjoyed it a long time ago, but now it's just, I couldn't watch it.
Yeah, and the teen drama crap didn't end after high school. It went in straight on through college.
Right. But that's the thing I liked about Angel. It didn't have that teen drama stuff. It's just, and they had like a great story going, but when they wrote the original stories, I don't think they expected it to go this long, because like I said, that there was a point, there were several points where I think it just completely jumped the shark. And you want to talk about that last episode. That was my favorite, was the last scene of the last episode.
Right,
where
right, when that dragon's coming down.
Yeah. You take the 100 on the left, you take the 100 on the right, I'll take the ones in the middle. I always wanted to kill a dragon.
Yeah, I think that was the high point of that whole season. But I had a lot of it that last season. Boreanaz was tired and he was done. I mean, he was obviously letting himself go. He looks better now than he did then.
Well, now he's got to play a Marine or some military.
Well, not anymore.
Navy SEAL, I think.
Not anymore.
They canceled it?
Oh, wait, no. Did he have another show? Because he was on Bones for forever.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's another one after Bones.
Yeah.
So do you think I could enjoy Angel without having to go through all of Buffy?
If you know the background of the characters in Buffy, then yes. But if you don't know the background of the characters, it may be a little rough. I think you can still enjoy it, but I don't know. I watched like all of, I think I watched all of Buffy first, and then I watched all of Angel.
And, you know, my favorite character, Faith.
I like everybody's favorite character.
Right?
Do you guys remember a show called Brimstone? I just watched that recently. I think they didn't even finish the first season, but man, it was good. If you're into shows like Millennium or something like that, it was really good.
Again, at the time that was on, that was my favorite show.
Yeah, I don't remember Brimstone.
Oh, it was great. It's about this cop who his wife is raped, and he ends up killing the rapist, but doesn't get found out. And then like a week later, he gets in a shootout and gets killed. But because he killed that man, he gets sent to hell. And 15 years later, the devil brings him back to Earth to hunt down all these souls that had gotten out of hell. And once he finds like 113 of these souls, the devil's supposed to give him a second chance of life on Earth. And each episode is him tracking down one of those souls, and they're all like murderers and stuff like that. Real bad people. It was great. It was really dark, but had a great story, and the premise was really cool, and I enjoyed it. I'm sad it only lasted 13 episodes because it was good.
That sounds like a couple of other shows. The one that comes to mind is Winona Earp.
I haven't seen that.
You might like it. It's about Wyatt Earp's great-great-granddaughter or whatever, and she has to hunt demons that have escaped from hell, and every time the Earp dies, they all get a chance to get free again, and the next one has to do it all over again.
Is that a series? Or?
Yeah, a couple seasons.
It was just canceled, I think, but it's on Netflix. I don't think there's going to be any more of them, but the latest season, two or three, was just, you know, start on Netflix last fall. Only problem I have with that, and because I'm an aficionado of old weapons, they call, you know, she's got Wyatt Earp's gun, and they call it the Peacemaker, it's something unique, and you know, there's a bunch of peacemakers out there. Now, what she's actually carrying is a bunt line, which it may or may not be true. It's kind of a myth. There was a rider at the time, used a profile bunt line, and he claimed to have bought this special Colt with a 10-inch barrel and presented it to Wyatt Earp, and Wyatt Earp liked it because he would hit people over the head with it, you know, to avoid shooting people if he could. But so that's the myth. There's no proof that Buntline ever actually went west and met Wyatt Earp in Dodge City like he claimed. But it always annoys me on that show where they call it the Peacemaker like it's the only one ever made.
Did you say it was already canceled?
I thought I'd heard there wasn't going to be any more of it. I could be wrong.
I'm not surprised. Second season, once again, another show that was kind of jumping the shark.
And there's one similar on Netflix, Van Helsing. Again, a female protagonist, supposedly descendant Van Helsing, and it's sort of like a zombie apocalypse, except vampires. You know, it's kind of like The Walking Dead with vampires.
Now, did that one get canceled, or they have newer episodes of that?
I don't know. I think there's a current season up, but I don't know if they're going to do any more.
That wasn't bad. It was definitely watchable.
Yeah, unfortunately, for all the streaming services I'm on, there's more stuff that I can get to.
Right.
Yeah, I'm still going through the 80s and 90s. It'll be a while before I catch up to our current day.
Danny, you said you were a fan of Red Dwarf?
Oh, yeah, I could watch that show over and over. It's one of my favorites.
I have watched that show over and over. And I'm still waiting for the next new season to come out, and that, I don't know if that's supposed to be this year or next year.
Yeah, those new seasons were surprisingly good, except for there's one that is it like a one-off movie or something they did that was really weird.
Oh, you're talking about Back to Earth.
Is that what it was?
Yeah, the three episodes.
Yeah.
I wasn't a big fan of them either. And then they finally did, you know, seasons 10, 11, and 12, and then those kind of did a lot better. But when I'm going through, I skipped those three episodes.
Yeah, it's just, it didn't seem to have the same kind of humor that it wasn't really funny at all, I didn't think. They took the laugh track out too, which was weird to me watching that. But yeah, as far as especially the old stuff, the 80s stuff, and early 90s, I love that Red Dwarf. It just gives me a feeling of nostalgia watching it, you know.
Yeah.
Kind of sometimes like that old Doctor Who stuff kind of does the same
thing. I still prefer the third Doctor over the fourth.
Oh, another series I finished recently was Blake 7. Do you guys ever watch that?
No. It sounds familiar, though.
I believe that was from maybe the late 70s. It was a BBC show. And the effects were, you know, everything is dated and low budget, but the writing was excellent. It was really, really good. If you ever get a chance to watch Blake 7, I watched the whole thing within like a few days, and it's just captivating.
Last I looked, all the episodes were out there on YouTube, whether it's legal or not, but somebody posted them. Unfortunately, the guy who played Avon died just last week.
Yeah, I watched it on YouTube, and the YouTube channel is called Blake 7. Like, I don't know if it has anything to do with official Blake 7 or not, but yeah, they're all on there. And it was great. Did you like it, 50?
Oh, yeah, I was a big fan back in the day when it was on PBS. I don't think I haven't seen, like, maybe the last season or last couple seasons. I keep meaning to go back and watch them. I think probably I left for college or something about the time.
Yeah, you should go back to the whole thing and just, because that last season, the end of the last season, I mean, the way it ends and everything, I don't want to spoil it, but it's amazing. It's really, really good. For the time, especially, how far advanced the writing was, and it was great. What about you, Ed? You still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Are there any shows that you're interested in or watching?
The Larry Sanders Show with Gary Shandling.
Oh, that was great.
Yeah, I think Gary Shandling was Larry David before Larry David, as far as really biting sarcastic humor.
Yeah, what's the guy's name that was later on in Arrested Development and Transparent that was on that show, the big ball headed guy?
I can't think of his name. The actor's name?
Yeah. Anyway, he's still really good in the stuff he does. But yeah, that show, I didn't appreciate it when it was on. But now when I go back and watch it, it's really, really funny. And it was really ahead of its time, too, for that kind of show. Like you said, it was the basically Curb Your Enthusiasm before it existed.
It helped establish HBO. And I love Rip Torn in that show.
Yeah, yeah, he's great.
Yeah, that's another elephant in the room. Not so much that people were dissatisfied, but just because it's over, I wonder how many cancellations HBO has had, at least on their streaming service in the past 2 weeks.
Is that because of people didn't like Game of Thrones? Or?
Well, more that maybe Game of Thrones was the only reason they were subscribed in the first place.
Are they going to do a prequel to Game of Thrones?
Yeah, definitely the prequels in the work. I did hear a deal the other day. A lot of people talked about one of the shows that they were going to do, and one of the five shows that they only had one move forward was the one about, you know, the future adventures of Arya. And apparently that's not likely because George R. R. Martin actually wanted to do the book on that. And he's put the kibosh on HBO doing anything that he's going to do.
Okay. Did we want to officially start the show? Because I want to ask Danny something, but it'd be better for the show.
Yeah, it's probably about that time, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm ready.
Yeah, I hosted last time, and I'm probably going to be doing a lot of talking. Honky?
Sure, sure. Hold on one sec.
SMLR 2.0 is the revamped Sunday Morning Linux Review with Tony Bemis, Mary Tomich, and Tom Lawrence. On even episodes, we cover distro fever and tech news. On the odd episodes will be fresh looks where we review a distro or software or tips and tricks. Live recordings are bi-weekly. Sunday morning on both Google Hangouts on air and audio only stream. Visit smlr.us for all the shows and the live recording schedule.
Oh my God, it's Hacker
Public Radio.
Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
The Linux Link Tech Show. Tune in to the world's longest-running Linux podcast live every Wednesday, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Find us on the web at www.twlts.org or email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. IRC server, thelinuxlink.net, /techshow. Join Pat, Alan, Link, and Joel. And don't forget the two Dans. They are so hot. I know, because I've kissed them both. And Flying Rich, he's a bloody drunko.
If you don't like a guest, you can get up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that'll get back.